Good morning, wherever you may be around the globe, in the chat room, on another planet, or on the other side. This is Late Night in the Midlands, and I am Michael Vera, and I do welcome all of you, wherever it is you may be. Folks, we've got a guest returning with us who's not been here in quite a while, John DiNardo. Will be joining us, and I am looking forward to talking with John tonight. Should be interesting conversation, as he is a guy who I think, out of all the guests I've ever had for Planet X, I think he puts forth the best argument for it. I think he just does. He pulls out evidence, whether it be circumstantial or what, he pulls out. I mean, he points to things and he tells you where you can find it. And I mean, he's just the most detailed, I think, Planet X guest I've ever had. And that's why I'm looking forward to having him back tonight. John DiNardo returns to Late Night in the Midlands tonight. And well, I've got some adjustments and stuff to make here, which I might be making during the show here and there. So, folks, you know, this is kind of a, it could be a mistake Friday. We'll see. I've got some new things that are going on here. Number one, phone number, that's going to change. Matter of fact, it has changed. We'll get into that in just a moment. I'll give all the new instructions and all that good stuff in a moment. First, I should tell you this broadcast is coming at you live from the capital city, Columbia, South Carolina, which is located on the east coast of the United States. The website's www.latenightinthemidlands.com. It is December 30th, 2016, and this year is almost over. I say, you know, most years we look back and say, oh, thank God that year's over. I don't feel that way this time around. 2016, I think all in all, despite, a lot of things, I think it went pretty well, personally. But that's just me. All right. So, yeah. So, Skype kept screwing up. All right. Skype kept screwing us up bad. We'd put the guest on and then we'd try to take calls and it just wasn't working. And people have given me great advice about downloading the older version and stopping it from updating itself. Turn the auto update off. I've done that. I've done it a million times. Skype themselves, their technicians have gotten and done it. And guess what? It's not worked. So my Skype, it's apparently, I don't know, there's not too many. I haven't seen too many having this problem but me. But rather than sit and suffer with this issue anymore from Skype, I'll be nice. We've changed things up a little bit. The new call-in number is 213-286-1818. 213-286-1818 will be passed along in the chat room periodically. Not taking calls now, so do not call now. I'll take calls later in the show. And when you call, you'll hear the show, but you'll be on hold. And I'll bring you on. I'll bring the calls in the order I receive them. And every now and then you might hear a little message come up and a woman tell you, you've been muted. You can press this to unmute yourself. My recommendation to you is don't unmute yourself, because if you do, I'll kick you off the line. I'll block your number and you won't call in again. I mean, that's how serious I'll take that. So when you're muted, stay muted until I unmute you. That's how our new system's going to work. And so there we have it. Now, with Skype, I can still and still will take Skype-to-Skype calls. Like, if you have a Skype ID and you want to call my Skype ID, we can do that still. We'll do that. I could probably even take calls on the old line still, 803-392-4566. The problem I was having is having the guest on the same line I'm taking the calls, because Skype is not letting me do multiple, you know, group calls. It's just not letting me do it. So there'll be no grouping on Skype. So if somebody calls, if you do use the Skype lines and somebody's already on the phone or on the air with me on Skype, I'm just going to let it go until they're done, because I can't bring more than one in on Skype. And that's just the way it's going to be. I could care less about Skype now, but if you want to use it, you still can. I will still take your calls on it. I won't put you on the back burner because you use Skype. But the new number, 213-286-1818. And we should have absolutely no problems at all. Now, you know, volumes and things, hopefully everything will work out fine. But if not, we'll make adjustments as we need to. All right. So that being said, I've got a little bit of news I want to get into here. And then we'll take our break and we'll get into all the good stuff, the hot, juicy stuff after the break. Scientists set to revive extinct steppe bison. So they want this old ancient bison, they want to bring it back. They say teams from Russia and South Korea are working together to bring the extinct species back to life, thought to have disappeared at some point within the last 11,700 years. Atlantis, anybody? They say that the bison was once a common sight across Europe, Central Asia, Canada, and Japan, and the plan to create a live clone of the species will involve extracting its DNA from a well-preserved bison tail that was discovered earlier this year in the Siberian permafrost. Now, if the researchers succeed, then not only will they have achieved a major milestone in resurrecting this extinct species, but they will also be one step closer to bringing back the woolly mammoth. So woolly mammoth maybe next on their list, and who knows what after that. Maybe they'll try to bring Tesla back, hoping that he knows what he knew. Anyways, blue comet to pass Earth on New Year's Eve. Is it a sign of impending doom for 2017? That's the question. I kind of just roll my eyes to it and say, well, you know, it could be, yeah. But, of course, there's going to be those out there who don't know any better who will still, no matter what, make it be. The strange blue comet, 45P, will pass the Earth on New Year's Eve, and they say that it could cause chaos for 2017. I'm not going to hold my breath, and I hope you don't either. They say that it is a periodic comet that can be seen from the Earth every 5.25 years, with 2016 being regarded by many as a year filled with bad luck. Well, I guess it's bad luck if you're one of the celebrities who have passed away. It's probably bad luck if you're Hillary Clinton. I mean, bad luck in that instant if you're one of the crybabies who have curled up on the street corner crying because of the election didn't go your way. Well, 2016 might have been horrible for you. I don't think it's been that horrible, personally. Anyways, conspiracy theorists have claimed that the object will break apart as it zooms around the sun, splitting into smaller pieces, which could impact the Earth and cause devastating earthquakes. The sun could implode and suck us in with it. a lot of things could happen. So folks, don't go running to the hills yet. Let's all die together, shall we? Nearing exit, Obama seeks to tie Trump's hands. Well, of course he does. He's unleashed 3,853 new regulations, 18 for every law. I say it's a record, 97,110 pages of red tape. President Obama, I don't even like calling him that, but that's what you call him, I guess, has taken a number of actions in the waning days of his tenure that appear designed to box in President-elect Donald Trump. Obama's decision Thursday to sanction Russian entities for election-related hacking is just the latest obstacle he's placed in Trump's way. And I like how Putin handled that. We'll get into that in a minute. Days before the sanctions were unveiled, the Obama administration allowed the UN Security Council to condemn Israel settlement activity, something that could have, quite an impact on the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. Obama has also permanently banned oil and gas drilling across large swaths, they say, of the Atlantic and Arctic Oceans, closed off 1.6 million acres of Western land to development, and scrapped the last veggies of a registration system used largely on Muslim immigrants. Those actions, as well as Obama's claims that he could have won a third term. Obama, you didn't win anything. You were put in your place. You were placed. You didn't win anything. You were placed. Just like Hillary Clinton, they cheated like hell for her. The same thing happened with Obama. I just seen something. Get this. Might have come from Rascal. Autumn showed it to me. But I had just seen something that stated that Obama's kids aren't really their kids. I mean, yeah, I'm not going to get into that conspiracy right now. But I wouldn't doubt it. I kind of jokingly, but not jokingly, commented years ago and says, you know, everything's fake about this guy. They probably rented the kids. You know, I don't know. So anyways, he's doing everything he can to make sure that it's not going to be a good transition. And of course, Trump responded to Obama's attacks, saying that, you know, he thought it was going to be a smooth transition. Not, he tweets. Of course it's not. Obama doesn't want everything that he's done is going to be reversed, and he don't like that. And again, there's no telling in the next 20 days what this scumbag and the rest of his minions and colleagues will do to maintain the power that they have. They're trying desperately to get fire going between themselves and Russia. It's like they want war with Russia, which is just insane. I mean, if it could be avoided, why not avoid it? They're accusing Russia of hacking. I've seen no evidence whatsoever that Putin or his administration, his government, has been involved. Now, maybe they were doing something. I don't know, but I haven't seen it. You know, and you might say, well, you're not in the White House. You're not privileged to see it. Okay. But if you're going to take my tax dollars and you're going to use those to send my brothers and sisters in harm's way, then I think I have every right to see the same evidence they see as for a reason or purpose to do such a thing. Anyways, I don't think it's going to get that far because Putin laughs at Obama. He does. He laughs at Obama. Everyone's heard that recording of Putin laughing. Just imagine it, because that's all he's doing. He's laughing at this guy. He's like, you're going to be out the door in what, few weeks, couple weeks, something like that. You're going to be out the door. It's going to be all over with for you. He called Putin called him angry and shallow brained. So he's just going to sit back and wait for Trump to get in there. And then they'll take it from there. I mean, they want to be all tough with Russia, but they want to go over and give Iran $1.8 billion or whatever the heck it was they gave them. Probably a lot more. All right. So following this morning's reports that the Prime Minister, Sergei Lavrov, recommended to Putin to take retaliation because, I don't know if many of you might know, but they went and they kicked Russian diplomats out of the country today, kicking them off. They have these properties that they'd use in the United States. And when we get the same treatment over there in Russia, well, Obama has ordered them out and just went and disrupted their, you know, their homes and kicked them all out of here today. And Putin was advised to do the same thing to the Americans in Russia. But he says that he's not going to stoop to such a low level. He's going to take the high road, and he's not going to take it out on these other Americans for Obama's stupidity. He's going to wait for Trump to get in. I mean, that's a level-headed. Yeah, I mean, you know, he's pretty level-headed. If he could sit back and not let it get to him, and just, he's laughing because he knows Obama really has no power now. I mean, and that's what makes him really dangerous. I mean, no telling what he'll do. Him and his buddy there, Michael or Michelle or whatever. You know, you don't know what they're going to do. Mexican man charged with rape. He had 19 deportations and removals and just kept coming back because Obama left the door open. And he kept coming back and, you know, charged with rape. Now, if they had kept him out or arrested him, put him behind bars, you know, might have been a different story, but, you know. Britain scolds Kerry over Israel. I see. Maybe Kerry will get a couple more black eyes before he leaves, before he's done as Secretary of State. 15,479 Syrian refugees have been admitted this year. 15,479 jihadists have been admitted to the United States this year. Yeah, they're calling them Syrian refugees. I'm just going to tell you the truth. Jihadists have been brought to the United States. Obama and Hillary's army are now taking their positions in our country because it's been allowed. By the way, Black Lives Matter cheers Starbucks barista, I guess, for spitting in a cop's coffee. So someone spit in a cop's coffee, and now they're putting them on a pedestal for it. Oh. Black Lives Matter. Boy, do we need more of that in this country, don't we? Bill Gates says that the world is not prepared to cope with a deadly flu epidemic. The billionaire says he's crossing his fingers one doesn't come around in the next 10 years. See, you know, what is he trying to tell us? Is he really concerned, or is that a warning? How dare you topple the old world order? Just never know. Never know. Folks, I'm going to take a break here. When I come back, I've got my guest, John DiNardo, returning. And I think we're going to have a really good Friday night here as we learn about our doom, our gloom, and all that good stuff inside and around it. Folks, I'm Michael Vera. This is Late Night in the Midlands. We're going to take a break, and we'll come back with much, much more. Don't go away, everyone.
The L&M Radio Network offers a chat room for you, the listener, to connect with others who are interested in the topics and guests that the L&M Radio Network brings to you. During the live shows, the hosts will even visit the chat room and chat with you, the listener. Click on the big red Chat and Listen button at the top of the website and join us. No subscription is needed at either lnmradionetwork.com or latenightinthemidlands.com.
Hello, this is Dick Farrell, here to tell you about OxySilver. legally available only through CureShop.com and HealthyWorldStore.com. Don't be fooled buying silver products from copycats and criminals. So help save lives, putting drug lords and criminals out of business, and keep the LNM Network broadcasting. Register for our free cooperative at HealthWorldAffiliates.com/4948. That's HealthyWorldAffiliates.com/4948. And buy Oxy Silver and other great products in package specials at great discounts from TheCureShop.com. Buy Oxy Silver, GI Flora Pro, Green Harvest, Zeolove, and Love Minerals at great discounts at CureShop.com. That's CureShop.com with two P's. CureShop.com. Or call toll-free at 1-888-621-7611. That's 1-888-621-7611. Do it now.
Brad Olson is an award-winning author and researcher and has spent multiple years proving his works. His books have reached a wide audience across the country and around the world and have won numerous awards. He has appeared on dozens of television and nationally syndicated radio shows over the course of two decades. His book, Future Esoteric, goes behind the official story, revealing there is also an alternative narrative. The newly revised second edition includes more images, captions, and information than ever before. Future Esoteric examines the metaphysical nature of reality and the storyline of what is not being told to the mass majority of people. You can find his books at cccpublishing.com or click on one of his many banners on the LNM Radio Network site at lnmradionetwork.com.
When you need a reliable source for your toner, where do you turn? Laser Technologies International Incorporated, your source for quality laser printer, copier and fax toner. We supply a frustration-free cartridge guaranteed not to harm your printer. Delivering 100% of the quality at a fraction of the price. We have products for most major brands. Find us on the web at www.laser-technologies.com. Email us at service@laser-technologies.com. Call us at 561-792-9600. That's 561-792-9600. Laser Technologies, 561-792-9600. Providing excellent customer service since 1995.
Why subscribe to Late Night in the Midlands, you ask? Well, I'll tell you why. Late Night in the Midlands covers everything, and through the thousands of expert guests who have joined Michael Vera on his show, come pieces of the big puzzle, which started many years ago. Michael and his guests reveal information dating back to the beginning of time. To this very moment, Michael Vera not only brings you the best guests with the best information, but Michael is not afraid to call out those who are less than honest. You see, in this day and age, we need a radio show we can count on and a radio host we can trust to expose the truth one show at a time. So become a late nighter and subscribe now. Talk radio like no other. Late Night in the Midlands, bringing the truth back to talk radio.
Attention LNM Radio Network listeners. Did you know that when you're on the road with limited data or Wi-Fi available, you can still listen to every minute of the LNM Radio Network by calling 605-562-4203? No smartphone app or internet needed. Saves your data plan and no extra cost if you have unlimited minutes. Call 605-562-4203. 4203 to listen to the LNM Radio Network on any phone, anytime, anywhere.
Become a late nighter without the late nights and subscribe now to help Late Night in the Midlands bring you the best guests with the best information. On the east coast of the United States, from the capital city, Columbia, South Carolina, you're listening to Late Night in the Midlands with your host, Michael Vera. To talk to Michael Vera, dial 803-392-4566. Or around the world on Skype. Just use Skype ID LNM Radio.
Excuse me, what do you want to do tonight?
Same thing we do every night, Pinky. Try to take over the world.
And I would have got away with it, too, if it wasn't for those meddling radio show hosts.
If we don't deal with this now, soon, little Gamble here won't be able to get a nickel for his grandma.
We will keep this promise to the American people. If you like your doctor, you will be able to keep your doctor, period.
Enough from the clown.
There was supposed to be some kind of a greeting ceremony at the airport, but instead we just ran with our heads down to get into the vehicles to get to our base.
You're a liar.
I hope you die in prison as well.
That's all, folks.
Back. This is Late Night in the Midlands, and I am Michael Vera, and I am trying to get this all together here, folks. So hang on with me for a moment. I'm trying to get my guest on the new line. Yeah, that's it. Okay. All right. So hopefully it'll work here, and he'll be with us in a moment. And in the meantime, folks, the website is www.latenightinthemidlands.com. Go on over, become a member, be informed, and by all means, inform others. Very important that you do that. Now, I don't know. I don't see him popping up here yet, so I might have to go to Plan B here and bring him in on another line, which the line I didn't want to do, but yeah. And Ira, I took your advice. I tried to do this during the break, but had the same results. All right. Oh, I know what I'm doing wrong. See, I told you it's going to be a Friday. There'll be some mistakes. There we go. All right, so while that's connecting, why don't I go ahead and tell you a little bit about my guest tonight. John DiNardo, following his service as a U.S. Marine aircraft electronics technician, he earned the bachelor's degree in science education from Keene University, specializing in physics and biology, cumulative grade point average of 3.44, of a maximum 4.00, and received state certification to teach all of the sciences in the high schools of New Jersey. His early career involved teaching 12th grade high school physics, six classes daily. Desiring greater creative latitude, he reverted to his prior career in electronics, working for a host of companies such as General Instruments, McGraw, Edison Company. I mean, folks, there are a ton of them. Bell Telephone Laboratories, AT&T, it goes on. Inventing, building, and operationally proving electronic circuits used in the development of AT&T's commercial and residential communication products. During these years, he attended Fairleigh Dickinson University, taking courses in electronic engineering and in different equations. His work and studies in the mutually related fields of physics and electronics involves the principles of electricity and magnetism, upon which is based his theory that Earth's solid inner core is not only normally rotating, but it is abnormally revolving, which is weakening Earth's magnetic field and is undulating the normally smooth jet stream, thus causing, his words, the chronically violent extreme weather that has been afflicting the entire world for at least the past decade. His theory is that abnormal revolving of Earth's solid inner core is caused by hyperactive solar emissions blasting into Earth's magnetic field and feeding this energy into the center of the Earth, exerting lateral electromagnetic forces to push Earth's inner core off center. That sounds pretty serious, folks. Moreover, his theory is that the root cause of this solar blasting is electrical discharges fired at the sun by incoming plasma-drenched comets, which were gravitationally captured in deep space during the inbound travel of a sun-pulled brown dwarf star from deep space, which NASA has for decades called Planet X. Since such a celestial threat would weaken their control over the population, the ruling elite have concealed this from the American people. However, NASA has been concerned about the approach of Planet X for nearly a half century and has even published an internal document posted on the internet titled The Search for Planet X. So with that, folks, let me see if it worked here. I should have. Yes, I do. Everyone, please welcome John DiNardo back to Late Night in the Midlands. John, I welcome you, my friend. How are you?
Hi, Mike. Michael, I'm happy to be with you and your audience.
Well, it's good to have you back. It's been a while. And, you know, 2016's coming to a close. 2017 is on the horizon. And, you know, earthquakes have picked up. All kinds of weather patterns have gone crazy. And, you know, the things that you guys have told me through the years that we're going to be coming into our future here on Earth, weather-wise and other, you guys have not been off. You've been right. So I welcome you back, and I look forward to getting somewhat of an update on where we are with Planet X.
Well, thank you for bringing me together with you and your audience so that we can help to prepare one another for the disasters that are bound to be coming. And that's the whole purpose of our discussion here, is to alert people to the vital information that is being withheld by our government, by the diabolical rulers who really do not represent the people. These are evil people who have connived and lied and murdered their way to the top. They had no way represent the people. They are criminals, and everyone knows this, and it's gotten to the point where it's just blatantly obvious to everyone. So we have to work together to help to protect each other's lives, because the government certainly is about to go underground, and they have their literally trillion-dollar underground facilities that they have been building for several decades. That's very well documented. In fact, on my Vimeo channel, vimeo.com, you can look up my name on vimeo.com. You will find, if you go through all the numerous videos that I put up there, one of them actually has ex-Governor Jesse Ventura's visit to the underground facilities at Cheyenne Mountain, in the bowels of Cheyenne Mountain, and it's just spectacular what they have there. Lavish facilities for the few who rule and not for the remainder of the population. They have blast doors that weigh several tons, and their security chief, their Colonel Wynn, Robert Wynn, I believe his name is, stated on this video with Jesse Ventura that if there is any kind of disaster, such as a massive solar blasting, meteor showers, where the people would want to go underground, they're not going to get in because those blast doors will be closed before they even get there. That's what our government thinks of us, so we have to work together. The update on 2017 for Planet X is, it looks to me, I mean, I have not, I've just gotten so overloaded with information working on other issues besides Planet X that I just have not had the time. I would need a whole staff of people, which I don't have, to really study the graphs and the data on the earthquakes, on the volcanic eruptions, on the sinkholes, just think about this, the sinkholes alone are one manifestation of these earth disasters. And we're seeing more sinkholes. We're seeing more train derailments. Why would there be train derailments? Well, the earth is becoming less stable. And there's so many other manifestations of the earth's disaster, earth becoming disturbed from within. But we can keep track of them. One of them, I guess, would be looking at meteors. Meteors is one thing that the power elite find difficult to conceal from the people, because the people can see these shooting stars that come down, and what it is they're objects from space that are being dragged in gravitationally by larger objects, and as they pass, they're being dragged in and being pulled toward that great gravitational anchor, our sun, whose mass is approximately 300,000 Earth masses. So it's a great gravitational magnet, so to speak. So when it pulls these comets in, and the comets accompanying asteroids and meteors, they get sucked into the Earth's gravitational force field as they pass by Earth, as if they get close enough. It's like getting close to a whirlpool. If you get too close, you'll get sucked in. Well, that's what is happening to many of these meteors. They're getting sucked into Earth's gravitational force field as they get too close to Earth passing by. And naturally they come plummeting to Earth, accelerating to Earth, and again, the friction of these meteors creates such heat, intense heat, that most of the meteors actually explode. They light up, and they appear to be is commonly called shooting stars, and some of them actually make impact with the Earth. We have now more numerous sightings. The American Meteor Society, AMS.org, I believe it is, AMS.org. If you go there, you can look up the number of meteor sightings that citizens have reported to this American Meteor Society. And they keep count of them, and there's an increasing number of meteors being sighted.
There's one that's supposed to pass us, is it New Year's Eve or New Year's Day? And they're saying it's going to be a pretty close one. But they also say that it kind of swings by every 5 years. But it's another case. I didn't hear about it until just recently. And then, you know, all the celebrity deaths, another thing. People have been bringing up all the celebrities who've died. And I've been joking around, maybe it's not such a joke. I mean, maybe they're, you know, maybe they're not actually dying. Maybe they're cashing in their ticket.
Yeah. No, that's a good point. I mean, I've been, you know, there's so many facets. I look at this whole Planet X issue as being analogous to a huge multifaceted ball. And every of the thousands of different facets on it represents one side issue that connects to the major issue of Planet X. And one of the facets is people disappearing, politicians resigning, military officers, high-ranking officers resigning. Where are they going? Retiring. Also, you have the Queen of England. For a long time, I've suspected that the Queen of England, Prince Philip, and the royal family they have doubles. They have always had doubles. I have a photograph I like to dig out somewhere that shows both a close-up of Queen Elizabeth and Prince Philip, and they certainly don't look exactly. I mean, they've done a pretty good job of getting people who look like them, and they probably have had plastic surgery to improve their likeness. But still in all, they don't look exactly like them. So we have to watch out for the Queen going underground. I was told by another talk show host a long time ago that the Queen, this was way back in around 2003, the British Royal Crown has purchased large tracts of land in and around Crestone, Crestone, Colorado, which is not far from, I believe, I haven't checked it on the map, but I believe it's not too far from the Cheyenne Mountain underground facility. And incidentally, that Cheyenne Mountain underground facility is only about, I think it's 19 miles from the Denver airport.
Wow.
Now, the Denver airport, even the police told Jesse Ventura in its documentary on True TV, which I was fortunate enough to DVD record when it came out several years ago, because they've taken it off. I can't find it on YouTube anymore. So that's a clear indication to you that the power elite do not want people to see Jesse Ventura's expose of the underground facility at Cheyenne Mountain, where they intend to take the ruling elite and shut out everyone else when disaster strikes. They don't want the people to see it. But luckily, I was able to DVD record it myself, and I put it up on Vimeo. And Vimeo, I think, is a lot less policed than YouTube is.
It is. Vimeo is a lot better as far as people not harassing you for what you're putting up, and they don't come after you for every little thing that you do. So in that sense, it is better. I have a Vimeo too, but I haven't used it much lately. It's been a while. It's been a couple of years, I think, since I've put anything on it.
Well, you should, because, you know, actually, as you know, we have to pay $70 a year for that privilege of getting a better treatment on Vimeo than we get on YouTube.
Yeah.
But anyway, that video is up on there, and I should, you know, I've got to remember to send you the link to it, to Jesse Ventura, True TV, which is a major channel on cable, True TV, TRU TV. It's a major channel, and they took him off because he was he exposed too much truth, that it was really incriminating to the power elite. He had one program that incidentally would prove that they have mind control, where they hypnotize people. And they had a man on there whose name he would not reveal his name, but he actually had the courage to go on. And he was a CIA agent who was involved with these mind control assassins. Our solar system, you've probably heard this, is going through the galactic plane.
Yeah.
And that galactic plane is like a disc, a swirling disc in space with cosmic dust and planets and solar systems, a whole, you know, great many solar systems in that collected disk. So there's going to be greater forces on our solar system, disturbing forces. So it's a gradual thing. It's not turning on a light switch, but a gradual change in our system. But they made that date so that said, 2012. And I've got some of the documentaries that I DVD recorded also on the History 2 channel, where they talked about the coming, all the prophecies about 2012. A lot of them have valid information, but it's just that you can't say that date is the end of the world. It's the beginning of the end, and other people have said that too. They said 2012 is basically the beginning of the end. It's going to be a slow process of degradation in the climate of the Earth and in the geological activity of the Earth. Where do I go from here? There's so much. Go ahead.
Well, you had talked about the in your bio of the Earth's core being unbalanced. Tell me a little bit about that. Yeah, off center. The inner core is off center. Yeah.
Well, all geophysicists now believe that this is a very commonly accepted theory about the Earth's core. If you look at visualize something like a ball with a very thick outer layer, which is the mantle of the Earth, it's made of molten rock, primarily molten rock, very thick. Think of it as something thick like a pudding. Okay, that's just to give it a vivid imagery. And then within that thick outer layer is a deeper inner layer. Actually, it's molten iron, primarily molten metal. Excuse me.
Mm-hmm.
And within that cavity, that spherical cavity of molten metal lying deep beneath the mantle, is a solid iron core, which is the inner core. So you have two cores. You have a solid iron inner core and a molten metal outer core. So the inner core floats around, sort of like a cork. If you can imagine a cork floating on a bowl of water, and a bowl of water, and that bowl of water is sitting on a potter's spinning wheel, rotating around, such that the water in the bowl becomes swirling, in a constant smooth swirling motion. You can also think of it as, I think of it as a glass of coffee cup filled with coffee. And you have a stirrer. The stirrer might represent, it's a stirring stick. Or say a lollipop, okay? One of those lollipops with a solid ball at the end. So you put the solid ball of the lollipop into the center of the coffee cup. And you put the stick of the lollipop between the palms of your hands. And you can actually rotate that lollipop stick. You can imagine what I'm describing. You can visualize it. The lollipop candy ball with immersed in the coffee, center of the coffee, would just rotate. And it would just, you would still have a smooth, swirling motion of the coffee. If you look at it through the glass cup, the swirl, there would be no waves or ripples in the coffee. It would just swirl around rather smoothly. That's the way our Earth should be, with the core centered. Now, if the core were for some reason displaced, that center molten solid metal core within the molten metal outer core, floating around in that molten core, if that solid core were suddenly, somehow, or gradually displaced off center, it would still be rotating, but it would also be revolving around the center.
I see.
And that, you can imagine that if you did that with the lollipop. Now, instead of just putting the lollipop stick between the palms of your hands and rubbing your hands together and rotating this lollipop, keeping it in place centered within the cup of coffee, now you're moving it around while it's rotating. You're stirring it like you would normally stir coffee. What's going to happen to that, the smoothness of the surface of the coffee? It's going to start to ripple. Waves will be created. And if you were to move that lollipop, excuse me, I'm catching a cold here.
Oh, I'm with you. Yeah, so am I. Believe me, I totally understand.
You can incidentally take a lot of garlic, raw garlic. I cut it up with a potato peeler to get very thin slices. So the thinner the slices, the more your body absorbs. So use a potato peeler to, like a violin, and go gently across the clove of garlic, and you can get lots of thin slices into your food every day. Take iodine too, nascent iodine, along with the garlic. That helps a lot. And also vitamin C from the real fruits, because you get real vitamin C only from God. Lemons, limes, squeeze that in your water frequently. So between the real vitamin C, the iodine, and the garlic, you can help a lot. Stay away from sugar. Sugar weakens, reduces, lowers your body's immunity. Well, anyway, getting back to the subject. if you move that, start swirling, stirring that cup the way people normally stir a cup of coffee, you're going to have a lot of waves. And that's what's happening. Now that solid metal inner core is beginning to rotate and revolve further and further away from the center. The farther away from the center it rotates, the bigger the circle is that solid ball inner core describes in its path, right? The greater, you move it farther away, it's getting closer to the rim of the coffee cup now, and in so doing, it is going to create even greater waves, higher amplitude waves in the metal, in the molten metal, which is likened to the coffee in the cup. So the coffee in the cup, or the molten metal in the outer molten core, is going to start rippling with higher amplitude waves. And how do we know this? We can actually see an image of it. And, it's funny that I looked and I couldn't find any scientist who knows this, who understands this. I don't know why, but modern science really doesn't teach the basics that we used to learn years ago. And many people who have PhDs, they just don't seem to have the understanding. They go along with what's told to them, theories, And they're not understanding. I try to reach people, but they don't seem to. Some people seem to get it, but it takes a while. You know, it's like anything else, Michael.
Yeah, yeah, it is. Now, is this in return affecting our magnetic field?
Yeah, it is. Because, you see, what is I just wanted to finish up with one thing, and then I'll go on to what your question is.
Sure.
And that is that there are greater ripples in the molten iron core of the Earth are being manifested as ripples in our jet stream, because the magnetic field of the Earth, when that swirling iron core, molten iron core, begins to ripple, swirling core has always generated the Earth's magnetic field. I mean, this is commonly accepted by geophysicists, that the Earth's swirling magnetic iron, molten iron outer core is actually what is the swirling motion of it, impregnated with many electrons. Electrons in motion, as we know, as basic physicists will tell you, it's a big principle of basic physics, that electrons in motion create a magnetic field that sort of like encircles the linear line of the electrons travel. So if you have electrons traveling, say like, what's a good analogy? Sort of like a dog. Imagine a dog running, coming out of a swimming pool. And he's running, dashing out of the swimming pool in a straight line. And as he's running out, he's shaking all the water off of himself. And that water, droplets of water, are spraying out in all directions around him in his path, a linear path in which he's running. That's sort of an analogy. Another analogy would be cars traveling through a tunnel. Each car might represent an electron moving in a straight line. And the walls of the tunnel, the circular walls of the tunnel, would represent the magnetic shape of the magnetic field that's generated by those moving cars or moving electrons. So you get the picture, I think.
Yeah.
Straight line electron motion creates a magnetic field that runs coaxially concentrically around the line of travel of the electrons. Well, those electrons are impregnating our entire molten outer core due to beta radiation, that is the emission of electrons from their atoms. Beta radiation is basically defined as the emission of electrons from the valence bands of their atoms, and they become more or less like ions. So it's radiation, actually, which is could be damaging to us, for example. If we were to experience beta radiation exposure, it would be some damage to our body because these electrons have higher energy. Well, anyway, you can imagine with the high pressures and temperatures in the Earth, you can have beta radiation and you can have free electrons revolving, creating this magnetic field.
Right.
When the Earth is swirling, when the core, outer molten core, is swirling, causing ripples, like high roller coaster-like ripples, then you're going to have a roller coaster-like magnetic field that's generated. And that roller coaster abnormal roller coaster-like magnetic field, which is our Earth's magnetic field, then in turn creates the jet stream flow, which is commensurately ripply and roller coaster like. So now we have a roller coaster like jet stream. And you can see evidence of my theory that the swirling, irregular swirling of Earth's molten iron outer core eventually results in the roller coaster shape of the jet stream. because I have the videotapes of the jet stream from the Weather Channel going back to 2004. Those roller coaster like ripples in the jet stream were rather small. They would come in and maybe they would be less the amplitude, the peak-to-peak amplitude, the highest peak and the lowest peak of each wave of the jet stream. The highest peak would never get as high as the Canadian border. and it would never get as low as the U.S.-Mexican border. And furthermore, those ripples were rather close together, so you could get three ripples of the jet stream within the entire west to east coast expanse of the United States. That was back around 2004, 2005, 2006. And I watched steadily year after year on the Weather Channel as those roller coasters got bigger and bigger, meaning that the amplitude, the peak amplitude got higher, the negative lower peak amplitude got greater, such that this peaks of the jet stream now would travel as far as the Canadian border and even higher north, further north than the Canadian border, and further south than the Mexican border, deep into Mexico, as you see them now. So it's gotten tremendously increased in amplitude. And also, you no longer have three smaller jet stream waves within the U.S. territory. You have one. So not only has it gotten bigger in amplitude, but it's stretched out in wavelength. What does that tell you? That tells you that the iron core, that solid iron core, that ball has gotten farther and farther away from the center, closer and closer to the mantle of the Earth, which is a big pudding-like molten iron, molten rock mass, which is by far the deepest, thickest layer of all the three layers that I just mentioned. Okay, so now when that ball gets close to the Earth's pudding-like molten rock, it starts to cause greater friction. This is all basic. I mean, even ninth grade science, really, that's what this is. You have greater friction when an object is moving away from the liquid medium, which is the molten iron outer core, and toward the solid, more solid, highly viscous medium of Earth's mantle, out from the core, iron, molten core. So now the mantle is becoming disturbed and perturbed and frictionally disturbed. And now what does that do? If you look at a common lava lamp that children have in their bedrooms, the lava lamp is very similar to the kinds of mantle plumes, or they're also called thermal plumes. What's another? I have several names. Mantle plumes, thermal plumes, and some other one. But anyway, these are like the lava within your lava lamp. When the light bulb at the bottom, the base of the lamp, is turned on, the heat from the light bulb gradually heats up that slime, that gooey lava. And when it heats up, the lava will rise up. We've all seen that. So that's a perfect a piece of evidence to show us analogously what happens to the Earth's mantle when it gets overheated. It starts rising up with plumes that actually go up like, when you're cooking pudding in a pot, for example. You're making chocolate pudding. I don't know if you've ever made it.
Yeah.
But as it thickens, it starts out as very, very liquidy. And then as it begins to thicken, then you'll see plopping. You'll see gas rising up, creating like little volcanoes, actually, in the pudding when the pudding comes to its maximum thickness. And that's precisely what happens to the Earth. You're seeing more and more mantle plumes coming up, and then gases are arising with it that are causing methane. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was going to ask, is this contributing, and it probably is it contributing to the swarm of earthquakes that have been? Now, people, I go through this again. People will say, oh, we've always had the earthquakes, just never had so many outlets to report on it. I don't believe that. The earthquakes I've been watching. I get them in my email. The USGS sends me an email for a certain level of the earthquake, the bigger ones, five and above.
Right.
I've been getting a lot of those. Matter of fact, I just got another one yesterday. I mean, normally they come two or three a day.
I'm glad you're doing this, Michael, because I have not been keeping track of it. I just know it's happening, but I haven't been getting the data. You were getting the actual data.
Well, Dr. Rand talked me into it. He kept pounding my head about it's real easy. Just go up, sign up for the email alerts, and I did. And I'll tell you what, they're coming in like, especially the Asia. I mean, I'm surprised the place hasn't sank yet with all the earthquakes that have come in from, you know, the Ring of Fire, and it's just incredible.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, it's just this earth this hyperactivity, an abnormal revolution of Earth's solid inner core is causing a lot of that, a lot of the earthquake activity, because look, the mantle's getting heated up. You have greater friction now against the core, the mantle of the Earth, where the mantle meets the boundary line, where the mantle meets the molten iron core beneath it that I just described. When that meets the mantle, you get all that friction, and then you get pieces of the mantle begin to slough off into the molten iron outer core. And when that mantle sloughs off in there, now you're the viscosity of the molten iron outer core becomes greater, becomes thicker, more viscous. And what happens when you have a more viscous liquid with an iron ball, the iron inner iron core rotating in a thicker, more viscous liquid, you have greater friction. Greater friction creates greater heat. So now the mantle plumes are getting worse. It's going to be like a domino effect. I think we're going to see an exponential increase, and you're noticing that now. You people are pretty aware of what's happening with the Earth in so many different ways.
Well, a lot of people are, but not ever. There's still, I mean, if I wasn't getting these emails sent to me, or these earthquakes sent in my email, it wouldn't commute in my head like it does now, actually seeing them coming in. I'm thinking, I go to my email, I'm thinking, what, another one? I mean, I just got two of those, you know, today. And
yeah.
So then it starts adding up because you're seeing it, you know?
Yeah. In fact, what you're saying is true, that people become changing their attitude takes time. And gradually, when they see events occurring over and over again, just like in the mass media, that's how they brainwash the public, by hitting them with the same story over and over again and the same theme. And that's eventually people begin to adopt the attitude, the state of mind that the mind controllers want the people to adopt. And likewise, when we become educated, not by propaganda, in this case, it's by real earthquake activity. And that's, we're seeing the actual factual data that's coming in that proves to us that, hey, something's wrong with the Earth, but we've known it all along because we see a whole host of other anomalies.
And our weather is another one of those.
Weather, yeah. Flooding, we've had record-breaking floods frequently. One record breaks the previous record.
We're breaking records left and right. I mean, everywhere. Temperatures, you name it. Everything is being called.
The Weather Channel doesn't even want to tell you that anymore. They used to tell us, like, I remember about back in 2010, they said, well, we had 5,623 record high temperatures. Now they don't even tell you that anymore because it's getting so off the charts that they don't want to shock people.
Well, I noticed words.
The Weather Channel even admitted that.
I noticed words like historic being put on storms constantly now. That's like we had floods here in South Carolina, I don't know, over a year ago, and they, you know, historic floods. It's like historic this, historic that. Even
that's
some of this
right.
stuff
no,
has been,
point.
Some of it's been called biblical.
you're absolutely right. That's a very good point to bring up. I mean, I'm glad that you helped me out because I've got so many ideas in my mind and things that I have to remember that I can't possibly dredge out every memory, every recollection regarding every issue because there's so many different facets to this Planet X mega issue.
Yeah,
and I'm glad that you're bringing this up. You're right. The word biblical and the word epic, too. Epic floods. You hear that all the time. Historic floods. You never heard this before. Back in the 70s, everything was nice. The jet stream was smooth. The weather was boring. The Weather Channel was the most boring channel on TV. Now it's the most exciting.
Well, yeah, and I mean, and now that I mean, they could do 24/7 with weather because it's that it's like the old news when they first start following car chases, police chases. You know, it was exciting. Well, the weather has gotten like that. It's just incredible.
Yeah, I mean, England weather windstorms that are just blowing things away. Winds up to 80 miles an hour are very commonplace nowadays. And we're seeing a lot of that today, too. So it's the windstorms, the epic, biblical, historic floods that are happening repeatedly, the storms that are so big, and hurricanes, basically, land hurricanes that have such a wide diameter. We've never seen them so wide, so great in diameter before. Hurricane Matthew and Hurricane Sandy. Whole host of others, and we can go on and on. We could waste a whole night talking about weather, but people know right. People should know this because we've got to get prepared. But at the basic, I think what we need to do, and I think you know too, that what we have to emphasize is, folks, just start saving. Don't throw away your plastic bottles. Rinse them out real well with hot water. Fill them up with tap water, and store them in your basement. Get shelving that you can make, like pieces of plywood. You can put pieces of plywood in between each layer of bottles so that you don't need these big expensive shelves, which actually waste a lot of height space because you can have a lot of empty space in between, the second shelf and the third shelf. So I just take basically that masonite or particle wood, which is rather thin, eighth inch, and I use that to separate layers of bottles. Of course, you want to take all the bottles that are pretty much the same height, put them all together in one layer, and then maybe I make one stack about maybe 20 inches by 24, 20 by 24, and that'll be one stack of bottles, and then I put some masonite or particle board or even plywood in between each layer so I can get about four or five layers of bottles.
Right.
I have to choose, again, the ones that are... Very, very often, though, you get bottles that are not exactly the same height, a little bit different. So what I do is I take a piece of cardboard, which is somewhat compressible, and some of that cushiony foam packing material. It's like sheets. It comes in sheets. It's about an eighth inch or more in thickness. And I put that in with a layer, sandwich that in with a layer of cardboard, so that any disparity in the heights of some of the bottles will be compensated for by the cushioning effect of that separated cardboard sandwich with that spongy packing material, that spongy sheets of packing material. So anyway, it's a little bit time consuming, but my basement is getting such that even though I have many, many, many bottles of water, I've got more empty bottles now than full bottles, and it's getting out of control. I've got to do something about it. I know I can't do it all in one day, so I'm going to have to make it a ritual to fill up, say, five bottles a day, rinse out, fill up, get all the bottles of the same height, put them together, and fill them up, keep on making layers, you know, because I got still got a lot of space between. I get, you know, a height that I can use up. Sure. Before the weight of the bottles gets too hot, heavy, you know, and starts to jeopardize the stability of the bottom layer. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You don't want to put too many layers there because you don't know if it's going to withstand all that weight. But I still got a lot to go. Anyway, that sounds mundane, sounds trivial, but it's the most important thing because when we lose power, which we're going to lose, and it's going to be for a long time, I'm not making this up. This comes from none other than the White House. You can look up the White House. I just posted it. My friend sent it to me. Actually, an executive order or some kind of
for space weather
from the White House.
For space weather and how it can affect our power grid, yep.
Something like that, yeah. From the official government document saying, there will get prepared for power long-term power outages. So they're telling us about it. I mean, what's his name? Ed Koppel, who used to be a ABC TV evening reporter, mm-hmm. Ted Koppel, remember him?
Oh, yeah.
He wrote a book, that warning about this, he wrote an entire book. And now Dr. Michio Kaku, a physicist at State University, I think, New York, or City University in New York, also is warning about it. So many people are warning about these power outage failures long-term. The reason they would be long-term is because the solar emissions that I was just talking about are what is causing, I believe, long-term chronic solar blasting. Is hitting the Earth's magnetic field. And you had asked me a question which I didn't really address yet. You said, has it got anything to do with our magnetic field? And, well, the sun's solar electrified particles, protons and electrons, that are being blasted out in all directions, striking, some of which strike Earth's magnetic field. Well, those moving electrons, as I mentioned before, they themselves, those streams of electrons coming from the sun and streams of protons, actually create, each stream creates a little old magnetic field encircling it concentrically, like sort of like a spring. If you were to take an arrow, here's another analogy, put an arrow through a coiled spring, a garage door spring, and that arrow would represent the travel, straight line travel of the protons, which are positive electrically charged particles, or also that arrow would represent the straight line travel of the electrons, which are negative electric particles. Mm-hmm. Well, both kinds of particles create magnetic fields, which are sort of analogous in shape anyway, to the coiled garage door spring. So you've got all these magnetic fields that are impacting trillions of them, you know, in a big solar wave of particles called solar wind, and blasting the Earth's magnetic field, creating magnetic, electromagnetic streams, like coils that I just described, which impact Earth's magnetic field. And now you have what I liken to electromagnetic jousting, where you see two people fighting with swords or with these long jousting poles and knights and armor, jousting one another. Well, you have the jousting of magnetic fields between the sun's solar blasting of magnetic fields and the Earth's magnetic field. And this impacts the Earth's magnetic field. It feeds back that energy from the sun, electromagnetic energy from the sun feeds back electromagnetically, right, from the Earth's outer core, like the skin of an apple, along the skin, right into the top of the apple, the dimple at the top of the apple, that goes into the center core, if you liken the Earth to an apple. So that electromagnetic energy travels thousands of miles from the Earth's magnetic field in space right into the center of Earth wherein is located our Earth's solid metal inner core. And that's what I believe has been laterally shifting Earth's solid metal inner core off of its center point and eventually causing the jet stream to ripple like a roller coaster.
If it continues to go off center, you know, and really unbalance things, wouldn't that in turn cause at some point a pole shift?
Definitely. You're right. It would cause a wobbling of Earth, and I expect to see a wobbling. I mean, we have to expect to see a wobbling.
Would we see that? I mean, if we were out at night looking at the stars, would we notice the wobble? Would we see it?
I'm glad you brought that up. The ancients, let's go by past reports, the ancient survivors of the last incursion of Planet X into our solar system, which occurred around 36 and a half centuries ago. And we can prove it. I'll try to make it quick, because I don't want to get too far off of one point.
Okay.
But I want to prove to you that it occurred 36 and a half centuries ago. Our geologists studying the great Santorini explosion, which had a volcanic explosive index, VEI, greater than according to their studies of past geological events, greater than we've ever experienced in modern days, the great volcanic explosion of the Santorini volcano in the Aegean Sea on the island of Thera. Well known. It destroyed the Minoan, a highly civilized Minoan civilization. Well, that volcanic explosion, they can date it back by counting tree rings. Tree rings are a great way to with high resolution, determine a date in ancient history, because each year, as you know, the trees will grow one layer of skin. Mm-hmm. And then each year that skin piles up and builds up, so that if you were to cut the tree, you would be able to count the layers and tell the age of the tree. We all know that. So I guess the trees they're looking at were petrified trees, where they were able to do carbon dating. And with carbon dating, you could determine the date of something that's petrified. So when you would put that together, the carbon dating put together with the counting of the rings, scientists have been able to actually determine when the great volcanic explosion of the Santorini volcano occurred. It caused tree rings to become narrowed because, obviously, when a volcano explodes, when many volcanoes explode around the world, they kick up all this black ash that blocks out the sunlight. So now the vegetation becomes starved. And that's why you see narrow tree rings, which they can count almost to the year, plus or minus 10 years. Count to be somewhere around, as I recall, 1630 BC, 1640, somewhere around there. I don't even remember the exact year. But you can look it up on Wikipedia. That's another good thing about, you know, me putting out all this information. People might say, well, he sounds like convincing, but I don't know. He's just saying a lot of words. Now's your opportunity, folks. You can prove it all. Grab a pen and paper now. I forgot to tell you from the beginning of this show, start writing down keywords that I mentioned, Santorini, S-A-N-T-O-R-I-N-I, volcano, and BC, write down the term BC, and then you'll get reports as to when they believe that it exploded just by counting tree rings. They counted the tree rings in the British Isles and in Canada, and they found it all to be the same. That's great. Narrowing of tree rings occurred around 1650, approximately, plus or minus 10 years BC. So, now that was like 36 and a half centuries ago. And we've all been told that Planet X comes in every 36 and a half centuries, because it is on a cometary orbit. Comets are like a pendulum, a cosmic pendulum that swings back and forth. Now, we all know that a pendulum on a grandfather's clock is very precisely periodic, regularly, uniformly periodic. That you can count you can measure the number of seconds or fractions of a second that a grandfather's clock pendulum swings. Well, similarly, we have cosmic pendulum, which are comets. Comets come into the sun, and what is the force that's pulling them in? It's the sun. The sun pulls them in, they come in, and some of them crash into the sun and cease to exist. Others, like Halley's Comet, we know come in at amazingly regular intervals of, I think it's like something like every 75 years Halley's Comet comes in. So imagine a bigger comet, what they call long-period comets, taking not 75 years to come in, but 36 and a half centuries to come in and out. But it's regular. It's predictable. It's chronologically predictable. So now we have 36 and a half centuries. Well, how can we prove what we've been told, that this Planet X comes in every 36 and a half centuries? We know for sure that the geologists or the ecologists who study ancient ecology have proven that the tree rings were narrowed roughly 36 and a half centuries ago, around 1650 BC, which coincides with the great exodus of the Israelites from Egypt, which is historically recorded in the book of Exodus of the Bible. Okay. Mm. But we still don't know if it's every 36 and a half centuries, unless we can go back another 36 and a half centuries before 1650 BC and prove it, that it's periodically regular, uniform. Well, let's go back from, count back, do some arithmetic, and go back from 1650 BC, when the great exodus of the Israelites occurred from Egypt, where God created all these natural disasters due to comets coming into our solar system. God created all this to liberate the Israelites from Egypt. The 36 and a half centuries before 1650 BC takes you 36 and a half centuries before 1650 BC takes you to around 5300 BC. I didn't do the arithmetic now because I had done it before, so I already remembered. 5300 BC was the previous incursion, the second past incursion of Planet X into our solar system. Now, if that's true, we should see geological disasters occurring around 5300 BC. And sure enough, there are two famous geologists, Pittman, and people should be writing this down, checking it out, because the only way you're going to really believe it is when you look it up yourself and do your own study.
Absolutely.
And you become your own historian.
That's
you become
it.
Your own researcher, and you say, wow, I've done the research myself. I can take this to the bank. I know it's happening. Therefore, I know I must get prepared. Whereas if you just hear me say it and you don't check it out yourself, you're not going to believe it, and you're not going to get prepared. So you write down Pittman and Ryan, I think it's Pittman and Ryan, Ryan. Just look up those two names, and just write in the term BC, and you'll get some of their reports that they had done research on the Black Sea. Oh, this Black Sea had actually overflowed. And when it was like sort of on a plateau, I believe, as I recall, and it overflowed into the Straits of Bosporus. In the I'm just going by memory, so I may have some, you know, variations in my recollection that are not accurate. But I'm pretty sure it overflowed into the Straits of Bosporus or into the Mediterranean somehow. And they've shown, from studying silt deposits in the Black Sea, that overflow, that great flooding overflow of the Black Sea, occurred around 5300 BC. So now we have two index points to show us, yeah, look, we can measure between 1650 BC, the disasters of the tree rings narrowing, the explosion of the great Santorini volcano, and many, many other volcanoes on Earth, 1650 BC, use that as one index point, and then another index point would be 5300 BC. So there you go. That is 36 and a half centuries ago. Between disastrous events, 36 and a half centuries. But let's try to go back one more just to seal our evidence.
Okay.
that the period, the time between each great Earth disaster is about 36 and a half centuries. We need to know this, because if it's true, then the next Earth disaster is about to occur sometime soon, in a foreseeable future. Okay, let's go back another, let's count back 36 and a half centuries back before 5300 BC, which was the great flood of Noah's day, 5300 BC. Let's count back 36 and a half centuries before that, and you wind up around 9000 BC. Now, many people, it's so far back that many people are confused or mistaken about dating the great sinking of Atlantis. But some of your best archaeologists are saying they believe it occurred around 9000 BC. And if that's true, and I believe it is, 9000 BC was when the great sinking of Atlantis occurred. That was a tremendous Earth disaster.
You know, I just read a report where there's a certain bison that was common in Japan and Asia, Canada, and they found a tail, a well-preserved tail of this thing, in, I believe it was in Siberia, and they're now going to bring this thing back to life, South Korea and Russia. They said that it was believed to have lived about 11,200, maybe 11,300 years ago. And I kind of question, well, what happened 11,200 or 11,300 years ago that killed it? I think of Atlantis.
It's around 9,000 BC, yeah.
Yeah.
Around 9,000 BC. Let's see now. It died, and they're trying to bring it back to life, did you say?
Yeah, it was extinct, and they're now going to bring it back, resurrected, if you will.
But this is amazing.
It is. And look, we've got a break coming up here. So hold your thoughts for a few moments, and we'll pick up where we left off. Folks, some of you have been trying to call in by Skype. Nevertheless, if you're going to call in, you're going to do it after the break. We usually wait until after the second break to take calls. Otherwise, we get, you know, to places we shouldn't be yet. Anyways, when we return, I will take calls. You could call in the old way on Skype if you like. You can use your Skype to Skype. We got L&M Radio as our Skype ID, so you could do it that way. You could call in on our new number, which is what I prefer you to do, 213-286-1818. So when Smith gives you the call-in number when we return, don't believe him. He's not telling you the truth. It's changed, and he just don't know it. 213-283-1818. My guest is John DiNardo, and I'm going to get to your questions that have been given to me in the chat room when we return. Folks, if you have questions, either call in or in our latenightinthemidlands.com chat room, you can private message me. Don't just put it in the main chat because I'm not going to go searching for your questions. You've got to private message me there. If you're on YouTube, you may give your question to one of our moderators and then pass it along. They'll pass it along to me. So again, my guest is John DiNardo, and I'm telling you, one of the most informative Planet X guest I've ever had. You could throw them all in a barrel, and I'll tell you what, when you have a conversation with him about Planet X, he doesn't just give, you know, blow a bunch of hot air. He gives you things. He gives you homework. Now, if you choose not to do the homework, that's on you. Now, with that being said, I'm going to take this break. We'll be back. This is Late Night in the Midlands on the LNM Radio Network. We are, well, we're traveling on a brown dwarf star headed for the second half of this show. We'll be back.
Brad Olson is an award-winning author and researcher and has spent multiple years proving his works. His books have reached a wide audience across the country and around the world and have won numerous awards. He has appeared on dozens of television and nationally syndicated radio shows over the course of two decades. His book, Future Esoteric, goes behind the official story, revealing there is also an alternative narrative. The newly revised second edition includes more images, captions, and information than ever before. Future Esoteric examines the metaphysical nature of reality and the storyline of what is not being told to the mass majority of people. You can find his books at cccpublishing.com or click on one of his many banners on the L&M Radio Network site at lnmradionetwork.com.
Hello, this is Dick Farrell here to tell you about OxySilver, legally available only through CureShop.com and HealthyWorldStore.com. Don't be fooled buying silver products from copycats and criminals. So help save lives, putting drug lords and criminals out of business, and keep the LNM Network broadcasting. Register for our free cooperative at HealthyWorldAffiliates.com/4948 and buy OxySilver and other great products in package specials at great discounts from TheCureShop.com. Buy OxySilver, GI Flora Pro, Green Harvest, Zeolove, and Love Minerals at great discounts at CureShop.com. That's CureShop.com with two P's. CureShop.com. Or call toll-free at 1-888-621-7611. That's 1-888-621-7611. Do it now.
The L&M Radio Network offers a moderated chat room at www.latenightinthemidlands.com. Just click the chat and listen page from the drop-down menu at the top of any page on the website, or click the Listen Live button at the top of the homepage at www.latenightinthemidlands.com.
When you need a reliable source for your toner, where do you turn? Laser Technologies International Incorporated, your source for quality laser printer, copier, and fax toner. We supply a frustration-free cartridge guaranteed not to harm your printer, delivering 100% of the quality at a fraction of the price. We have products for most major brands. Find us on the web at www.laser-technologies.com. Email us at service@laser-technologies.com. Call us at 561-792-9600. That's 561-792-9600. Laser Technologies, 561-792-9600. Providing excellent customer service since 1995.
Why subscribe to Late Night in the Midlands, you ask? Well, I'll tell you why. Late Night in the Midlands covers everything, and through the thousands of expert guests who have joined Michael Vera on his show, come pieces of the big puzzle, which started many years ago. Michael and his guests reveal information dating back to the beginning of time. To this very moment, Michael Vera not only brings you the best guests with the best information, but Michael is not afraid to call out those who are less than honest. You see, in this day and age, we need a radio show we can count on and a radio host we can trust to expose the truth one show at a time. So, become a late nighter and subscribe now. Talk radio like no other. Late Night in the Midlands, bringing the truth back to talk radio.
Attention L&M Radio Network listeners. Did you know that when you're on the road with limited data or Wi-Fi available, you can still listen to every minute of the L&M Radio Network by calling 605-562-4203? No smartphone app or internet needed. Saves your data plan and no extra cost if you have unlimited minutes. Call 605-562-4203 to listen to the LNM Radio Network on any phone, anytime, anywhere. You're listening to the LNM Radio Network. Talk radio like no other. Bringing the truth back to talk radio.
On the East Coast of the United States, from the capital city, Columbia, South Carolina, you're listening to Late Night in the Midlands with your host, Michael Vera. To talk to Michael Vera, dial 803-392-4566. Or around the world on Skype, just use Skype ID LNM Radio.
Folks, we're back. This is Late Night in the Midlands. It's Friday night. It's December 30th. We're almost to the end of the year. It's almost over. So we'll pass into 2017, and maybe some events to look forward to. We'll see, right? I'm going to get to your questions. I've got plenty of questions coming in by chat. Now, as far as call-in goes, you can call us at 213-286-1818. That is the number. Now, when you call, you'll hear some little voice tell you you're muted or whatever and how to unmute yourself. Don't unmute yourself. Stay muted until we bring you on for that number. Now, if you want to call on Skype, you still can. That's available as well, 803-392-4566, Skype ID LNM Radio. So we're working in this new number, but some of you, maybe you just don't like new tricks, I guess, and you want to stick with Skype. We'll take the Skype ID, you know, Skype to Skype stuff, and even the old number right now. We just can't do a lot with Skype because Skype has restricted us in some ways. I don't know why. It just happened. It's got a mind of its own. AI has taken over for Skype as far as we're concerned. So 213-286-1818. That number's also passed around in the chat rooms. But if you don't want to call in, there's other ways. You can get us in the Late Night in the Midlands chat room. Private message me. Real easy. You see my name, Michael Vera. Click on it. And a window will open. Write your message. Bam. You've got it to me. As far as YouTube goes, give it to a moderator, and the moderator will give the question to me. That being said, I'm going to go first to my email. That's mv@latenightinthemidlands.com. And I'm going to take a question here from Ronnie. And John, Ronnie asked, he says, "Can if we lose power and this starts fires, how would we handle something like that?"
How would we handle fires? Well, fires of any caused by any source, we would have to. I haven't really studied, but I mean, that reminds me. What I need to do is check my fire extinguishers.
Yeah.
I need to look at the instructions on how to use it. Get outside and actually, you know, go through a mock usage of the fire extinguishers that I have. In fact, I better actually turn them on to make sure they work. Because they're pretty old. So that's the first thing you need to do is be prepared for a fire. I may have to buy new fire extinguishers, and I'm perfectly willing to do that. They may have better capabilities now than they did 20 years ago when I bought mine.
I
think I should go out and buy some new fire extinguishers.
I had a job, and they were re-upping on all that stuff, and they were going to just toss them out. And the boss man said, "Well, if you want to take them home, take them home." So I took some home with me. There, you know, some were half full, but hell, they're expired. But I guess you're not supposed to. But I took them. You know, thank God I've never had to use them.
That's a good point. Expired. I mean, mine must be expired too. So, I mean, I better check mine out, but I think I just better buy new ones. So it's worth the expense just to buy. They're probably better technology anyway, you know.
Oh, yeah, I'm
so
sure.
That's the first thing you need to do.
Okay. And now Annie asks, she says, what do you think?
Second thing to do is your smoke detectors are the most important. So if there's a fire due to electrical problems or a power outage or whatever, you need the smoke detectors. Of course, they're battery operated. When you have a power outage, you should have a battery charger, which means you need some power source to give you minimal power, like solar. Because I've been in electronics for so many years, I built my own solar control system. And so what you need to do is order one, look up solar controllers, and get a few solar panels. Doesn't have to be a lot, but you'll get just enough to give you power to charge your whatever you need, like basic devices that are emergency devices, such as lights. And
yeah.
So that's how you can power your vital smoke detectors, which can tell you when a fire is occurring, and you'll be ready to extinguish it with your brand new fire extinguisher.
And I won't waste money on cheap old batteries. When I get batteries, I like to get rechargeable batteries, and so that I can recharge them. But I guess if the power's out, then you're going to have a way to, like you said, have a little solar thingamajigger there to get some power so that you can charge them back up, right?
Right, because they don't require very much power. So, you can just get a couple solar panels. I have four solar panels, actually. I have two that I use and two that I can plug in addition whenever I might need it when the power does go out. So, yeah, get that. And then I have a generator. You can get this, too. It's like a generator that puts out a pretty good sinusoidal signal that's supposedly good enough. It's called an inverter. No, not an inverter, actually. It's more than an inverter. It's just a standard generator. But this gives you a nice, clean sine wave that you can operate your laptop or whatever on. And it's made by Yamaha. It's a little thing, only weighs 27 pounds, and it's about the size of a suitcase or smaller. And I hung it up with these plastic poles, rods, yeah. Pipes, plastic piping, 3/4-inch diameter. Cut it with a hacksaw. It up in a dog cage. You ever see those dog cages? And you can hang them up because they have like metal loops around the top. So I got a dog cage and I hung it up underneath my deck, underneath the floor joists of my deck. So it's still a little bit below. If you can hit your head on it if you're not careful. But it's pretty well shielded by the underside of the deck. And then I covered it with plastic so the rain wouldn't ruin it. And that's my 1 kilowatt power source, which is pretty good. I mean, you can operate a lot of stuff with that. Anyway,
yeah,
that's another piece of information regarding emergency power, because the greatest disaster is going to be loss of power for months and years, probably years, because these million-dollar transformers that can only come from China. And how are you going to get them from China if China has power outages and there's no shipping because there's no power at the ports and there's no transportation on the highways because all the power is out? So those million-dollar transformers that are needed to replace the ones that are blown and sizzled by the solar blasting that's about to occur, which our government tells us is going to occur, those transformers will never get here. So we'll have, like, you might as well say, the remainder of our lifetime, we'll have to live without power. So, yeah. And that's going to be, it's going to be disastrous. Starvation. Nobody knows how to grow food. But so you got to store food. Store as much canned food, dry grains and stuff that's, I don't have to tell you all about amaranth.
Yeah, well,
get that amaranth. It's a high protein grain that they kept the Incas alive on.
And the whole people not knowing how to grow food, I mean, a lot of that was intentional to get us dependent on just going to these stores so that, they want to take away the stores and everybody's scratching their head, how do I eat? But people better. I'll tell you, John, I tried to grow. People are probably sick of me saying this. I repeat it a lot, but it's true. I tried to grow vegetables and such in my backyard. I had gardens. I've done it my whole life. And we put together a nice little setup, and the plants grew nice and strong, and the flowers were good, but no bees came along to pollinate them, and I got nothing at all.
So, oh, my goodness. It's going to be disastrous. Well, first thing we've got to do is store enough food to keep us alive for a while until we get the hang of growing our own food, which means we've got to start storing seeds. And, you can get a lot of nutrition out of the stuff that you grow indoors. Like, for example, you can get enough to keep you alive almost if you sprout inside using jars in your house. So, and this way, when you've got the protection of your house to keep your food sheltered, whereas if you have a garden outside, your starving neighbors are going to become marauders, ripping off everything in your garden because they and their families are starving. So you can't grow anything outdoors when there's a society is in chaos, in starvation mode.
Right.
It's going to be horrible.
Yeah.
But this is bad news, but it's also good news. If you can store enough food and keep yourself undercover long enough, I hate to even say this, but in a couple weeks, everybody else who threatens you will be dead. So you won't have any threats around you.
Well, that's true.
I don't know whether to laugh or cry at that.
Well, yeah, I mean, in a sense, that'd be a blessing, I guess. I mean, that's true. A lot of those people who are unprepared, and their whole plan of preparedness is to rob their neighbors, those people probably won't be around very long. Annie has a question here. She says, what do you think about brown dwarfs spewing up helium when it comes by? What effect would this gas have on us and our atmosphere?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure if it does spew out helium. Like, for example, Jupiter, our largest planet in our solar system, is similar in nature to a brown dwarf. It's similar in nature to Planet X in so far as it is a gas giant, and it's almost large enough to actually create nuclear fusion, as our sun does. Now, there's methane. I don't know what the gases are. It's maybe methane. I haven't really studied it too well. I don't know anything about helium. No, wait a minute. Maybe you're right. You're right. When you have nuclear fusion, you have helium produced. Did she say helium?
Yeah,
was
helium.
The word?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, you're right, because the sun actually produces helium in nuclear fusion. It fuses hydrogen, which has a nucleus of one, a nucleus of hydrogen. It's very small, the smallest of all the elements, I believe. It has only one proton in its nucleus, whereas most of the other atoms have more than one proton in a nucleus, which defines their character. Oxygen, for example, has 16 protons in its comprising its nucleus, which makes, that's the characteristic of oxygen. That's just an example. Hydrogen has only one proton. So what happens with hydrogen is when you have nuclear fusion, two hydrogen atoms are actually crunched together, and you wind up with not H1 hydrogen, but H2. That's the number two, represents the number of protons in the nucleus, and you wind up with the distinct element of helium.
Right.
So it does have helium and the nuclear fusion. I don't know how much is spewed out. I can tell you with our sun. Our sun is another good example, a good way of describing the chemical characteristics of a brown dwarf star, because our sun is a star. It's just bigger than a brown dwarf star. So, but our sun blows out electrons and protons, again, which are protons, which are hydrogen nuclei, minus their single valence electron. So it blows out hydrogen and electrons, but hydrogen protons, I should say, and electrons. But I don't know anything about the sun blowing out helium.
I see.
I don't think there's going to be a serious issue.
It might be the least of our worries, too. So.
Well, yeah, because what the sun is going to do is, I mean, this brown dwarf star is like a vacuum cleaner or magnet in space. As it travels through space, junk litter, deep space, I mean, far beyond our solar system, comes in from millions, billions of miles away, and it drags and gravitationally attracts all kinds of objects. It attracts small planets. It attracts comets. It attracts asteroids. It attracts even iron oxide dust. That's particles of all sizes. So when it comes in, it looks like a hazy green, a hazy red object. And someone has actually taken somehow smuggled pictures, films of it, at least a film clip of this Planet X, which we believe came from the South Pole Telescope. It's a quasi-secret telescopic location of infrared telescopic site that our government has secretly erected in the South Pole, the harshest environment you can imagine. Why would they do that? Putting up a telescope in the harshest environment on Earth in the South Pole, because that's where Planet X was coming in, below the Earth's ecliptic, between the solar system's ecliptic plane, which is that imaginary disk in space. I visualize it as like a glass disk on which all the planets revolve around the sun. And someone captured these films and put them on the internet and under the name Nibiru Shock 2012. And they were taken down really quickly. And I just hope that that person who may have worked at that South Pole telescope is still alive. But the bottom, basically what I was saying was that the pictures show, and I have them on my website too, is a hazy red glow around this object. It looks almost like a flame of a candle. If you were to run with a candle in your outstretched arm, the flame would sort of be pulled back, stretched backwards. And that's what this object looks like with a stretched backwards tail.
Is there somewhere
the whole thing is glowing red.
Is there somewhere we could see these pictures, even though this guy's not around?
Yeah, I had Sheldon. I think Marshall Masters had it, and I got it somehow. It's on my my website, which is excuse me. It's a long name. But it's simply just remember thelightofdayradioshow.com. That was from my friend, the webmaster Sheldon Day. It's thelightofdayradioshow.com. When you go there, you'll see a big Planet X logo at the top of the page. Click on that logo. You have to wait a few seconds for it to load, because there's a tremendous number of my audio interviews in my Planet X audio dramas, very interesting, exciting musical dramas that I put up about Planet X. So it's loaded with lots of data, and it takes a little while to load. But when you click on that Planet X logo at the top of the page of thelightofdayradioshow.com, it'll take you to my Planet X page, and then you'll see at the very top is a clip of that Nibiru Shock 2012 release, which was suppressed. And Marshall Masters may have some stuff like that, too.
Well, I have a lot of faith in you, John. I don't have as much faith in Marshall Masters. And the only reason why is because he used to come on the show, and I seen somebody had pointed out a discrepancy in one of his pictures, and I asked him about it, and his response was, F off. I mean, I was just asking him, you know. So he got a little mad.
Terrible. I mean, that person should not be that sensitive. Where, you know,
it happens.
Everyone should be prepared to answer questions. You know, I mean, that's what we're here for.
Right now, how do I get to that picture again? I'm on the website now.
Oh, good. Okay. Did you see it? The red glowing object with the tail. You know that tail.
Well, I'm on the front page. I see Sheldon. I see Planet X passes soon. So where do I go?
Okay, with the big X. The big X logo. It looks like a picture of a comet, a red comet.
Oh, okay.
Just click on that big X.
All right.
That's the logo. Yeah, Planet X.
Oh, okay. There it is.
Now, at the very top, you'll see a little film clip.
Yeah.
At the very top.
Nibiru Shock. Oh, I'm there. Yep, I'm watching. I see it now. Yep.
And what you could do is just type in Nibiru Shock 2012 when you get to YouTube. All one word, Nibiru Shock, S-H-O-C-K, 2012. And, you know, it reminds me, there's so many things in my mind about this whole Planet X thing. I just can't remember them all at once. But here's what it is. I'm glad that my mind is still functioning after all. All this information and going through all this. But anyway, that reminds me that there's a friend of mine in Italy named Luca Scantamburlo. And you could look him up, too. You should be taking notes. You can write down S-C-A-N-T-A-M-B-U-R-L-O. Luca Scantamburlo. Anyway, he's a researcher. He was in contact with a man by the name of, in Italy, a ufologist, UFO researcher who had his own magazine. His name was Cristoforo Barbato, B-A-R-B-A-T-O, Cristoforo Barbato, both in around Naples, Italy. Anyway, Luca told me and others, he was on other shows, he talked about what's called the Jesuit footage. And I think they took it off. I can't find it anymore. He told the story. Cristoforo Barbato was approached by a man who said, I work for the Vatican. I'm a secret agent for the Servizio Informazioni del Vaticano, which stands for Vatican Information Services. No one is supposed to know that this organization even exists. But we all know the Vatican. They're very likely to have their own CIA. In fact, I don't want to just offend any Catholics, but they may have their own assassination team, too. I don't know. But anyway, this man says, I work for the Servizio Informazioni del Vaticano, the Vatican Information Services, and Barbato was very suspicious. He said, show me your information, your credentials, and he showed him some credentials, and he says, I've got these footage for you, Mr. Barbato. This was taken by the Vatican. The Vatican is very much into Planet X. This gives you another major clue that this thing is real and that their power elite are very concerned about it. He says that what they did was this. This is what this agent, who was not supposed to talk, told Barbato. He said, what they do, they have the connection, the Vatican has a connection with the United States government. They launched a hypersonic aircraft from Edwards Air Force Base, I believe it was. Edwards Air Force Base in California. Secret launch, of course. Up into space. High enough to launch this camera. Very small. I guess it was a small probe with a camera on it. And this probe is traveling way, way out into deep space. Keeps on going, just like the Pioneer 10 kept on going. Or the Voyager. And it got far enough out where it was able to see. Take films, pictures, digital footage, I guess, of this object. And it was posted. I saw pictures of it. I never did download it. And it looked like a big revolving red ball with haze around it. And it has moons trailing behind it, too. But anyway, that's called the Jesuit footage because the Jesuits secretly captured films. This image was transmitted by, you know, telegraphy. Transmitted by transmitters, you know, digitally, just like they transmit information back from NASA probes and satellites. It was transmitted back to a secret base in Alaska, which was actually an abandoned oil refinery, which was used as a receiving station for the signals from this video footage space probe taking pictures of Planet X. And it came back, and that's how this guy from the Vatican got it, because it was received by the U.S. secret base in Alaska. And that's my story there from Cristoforo Barbato. And now that you can no longer find it, what does that tell you? That the information was probably true.
Yeah.
So that's basically what we have to look forward to. This thing sweeps the Earth. It's surrounded with this red iron oxide haze. Why? Why would it be surrounded with iron oxide? Because in deep space, you do have larger quantities of iron oxide. And remember, this thing is like a gravitational vacuum cleaner. It picks up many, many objects of varying sizes in its orbital orbit, and its orbital diameter is many, many millions of miles. So that when it comes in, and I'll have to tell you real quickly, this thing comes in below that glass. Visualize a glass circular tabletop, okay? Just the tabletop alone has suspended in space with stars all around it. You know, draw a mental picture in your mind. Yeah. And on top of this glass tabletop called the ecliptic is, in the center is a big bright ball called, like, which is the sun. And then further out is the other planets, Mercury, Venus. As you're going outward from the sun, it would be Mercury, Venus, Earth, Mars, Jupiter, Saturn, Uranus, Neptune, and Pluto. And so these objects, these planets, are all revolving around the sun. And below this glass circular tabletop in space, which we call the ecliptic, is Planet X coming in. Visualize it as a smaller little baby sun, much smaller than the big sun at the center of the tabletop. But this object is coming in from below. How do we know that? Because the late Dr. Robert S. Harrington, who many of us believe was murdered because he was about to reveal the fact that he had sighted this object, taken photos of it from this U.S. Naval Observatory facility, down in Black Birch, New Zealand. You have to get down close to the South Pole in order to see it, because it's coming in from in the southern skies below the ecliptic, and that's why they had to go to the Black Birch, New Zealand observatory to take photographs of it. And he was coming back. He says, when those photographs are developed, I am going to reveal to the public what we saw. And he used the blink comparison method, which takes blinking photos at various nights to see that one object amidst the billions of stars that is actually moving. The stars appear to be stationary. So if you do the blink comparison flashing method, you can see one object moving out of billions of them. And this one object was Planet X, and he determined, I believe, that the motion of this object was toward our solar system. It would naturally be coming in toward our solar system because our sun is a great gravitational fisherman whose mass is almost one-third of a million Earth masses, and thus it will suck in, pull in anything, even objects far out, such as this object, Planet X, that happened to be captured by our sun. And that's what they stated in the New York Times article of 1983, before they were suppressed by the National Security Agency, that all the astronomers in that New York Times January 30th, 1983 article state that this object is is now, at the, this was 1983, is now about 5 billion miles out, we believe. And that seems like a far distance. This is their words. Seems like a great distance. However, it is still within the gravitational pull of our sun, meaning that common sense tells you that if it was within the gravitational pull ever so slightly of our sun in 1983, it must have been continuously pulled in gradually closer and closer for the past 30 years from 1983 until now. And this is the 30th anniversary to the day of the discovery of it. I'm looking at my photocopy of the actual New York Times, not a transcript, but the actual photocopy of the front page, I'm sorry, Washington Post, December 30th, 1983, exactly 33 years ago to the day, today. And the front page article reads, "Possibly as large as Jupiter, mystery heavenly body discovered." Written by Thomas O'Toole, Washington Post, Washington Post staff writer. Quote, "A heavenly body, possibly as large as the giant planet Jupiter, and possibly so close to Earth that it would be part of this solar system, has been found in the direction of the constellation Orion by an orbiting telescope aboard the U.S. infrared astronomical satellite." So mysterious. Now, here's where the lies come in. They know it's Planet X, but they're going to lie to you and tell you, "Well, we really don't know what it is." Okay. Quote, yeah. Second paragraph. "So mysterious is the object that astronomers do not know if it is a planet, a giant comet, a nearby protostar that never got hot enough to become a star." Incidentally, that's what it truly is. It is a protostar that never got hot enough to become a star. Or is it, if it's a distant galaxy, so here's where the baloney comes in, the lies, the deception. Or is it a distant galaxy so young that it is still in the process of forming its first stars, or a galaxy, this is really nonsense, or a galaxy so shrouded in dust that none of the light cast by its stars ever gets through. Well, they had to throw in one piece of truth mixed in with all the other lies, that it indeed is a protostar, that is a baby star. Continuing on, quote, "All I can tell you is that we don't know what it is," Dr. Jerry Neugebauer, infrared astronomical satellite chief scientist for California's Jet Propulsion Laboratory and director of the Palomar Observatory for the California Institute of Technology, said in an interview, "The most fascinating explanation of this mysterious body is, which is so cold it casts no light and has never been seen by optical telescopes on Earth or in space, is that it is a giant gaseous planet as large as Jupiter and as close to Earth as 50 billion miles." Now, get this. They go on to say, "While that may seem like a great distance in Earth-bound terms, it is a stone's throw in cosmological terms, so close, in fact, that it would be the nearest heavenly body to Earth beyond our outermost planet, Pluto."
And they've been messing around over there by Pluto, too. And I've got that article up on my screen for YouTube for everybody to see if they wish. And, John, we've got a call. We've got Ira. And, folks, if you want to call in, you may at 213-286-1818. You can also call in the old way, 803-392-4566, or our Skype ID, LNM Radio. So many ways for you to get a hold of us. It's just we're trying out a new line here, new phone system, 213-286-1818. Ira, welcome.
Hey, guys. John, great conversation tonight. I'm loving hearing the information from you. You're always a great guest, as always, fascinating. So I just wanted to toss that out there real quick. I'm actually technically just kind of testing out things for Michael, but I did have a legitimate question for you. So one of the questions that I have, and I've talked about this quite a bit over on my shows as well, is, you know, this changing of the sunlight. I remember when I was younger, the sun being much more of a yellowish sun in nature. It had it was warm, you know, you'd get hot, of course, in the summertime, but it was not like a real searing heat.
If I walk outside right now during the summertime, I feel like I'm in a microwave. I am like burning to death. It's like just the skin is crisping on you, you know, as soon as you walk outside. So what is going on in relation to what you're discussing with all of this that is kind of like, you know, happening? Is it doing this in response to an object that's coming in, or is it just a change in the sun?
What a great point. I'm glad you brought that up because I just can't possibly think of everything. And you triggered a very important point. I mean, this is such a blatant, such a conspicuous piece of evidence, and it's so indisputable, so solid. The fact that the sun is definitely blazing hot, hotter than ever before. You're absolutely right. I can't stay out in the sun. I used to be able to, and now I go out my deck without a hat. Oh, man, it's just my head starts burning up. I have to put on a hat. I can't even look. And another thing is you need sunglasses. You cannot go out on a sunny day without sunglasses. You can go blind in a short time, practically. Well, the reason I think is that the sun is hyperactive. The sun has been hyperactive for about off and on ever since the last 15 years, when some of us believe that the planet X actually broke through the heliosphere. The heliosphere is like a huge sphere, way, way out, great in diameter, and surrounding the entire solar system, this heliosphere is comprised of protons, which are electrified particles. These are hydrogen atoms that have lost their electrons, so they're positively charged. So they call it plasma, actually. All this solar wind that's comprised of protons that is collected, it gets blown out. Just think of the waves on the ocean where waves keep on hitting the beach and piling up debris on the beach. Well, the waves originated far out, but they wind up piling up at a particular destination, which is the beach, the shoreline. Well, similarly, the sun is like a wave generator, blows out solar winds comprised of electrons and protons, the protons being nearly 2,000 times more heavier. Two times more, I shouldn't say heavier, it's not the correct scientific word. The protons being nearly 2,000 times more massive than the electron will travel farther out because they have more momentum. So naturally you get a collection of primarily protons in the heliosphere. Now this object came in, it penetrated, we believe, around the year 2003, the heliosphere, and that's taken a long time for it to come in. It started to discharge, but when it penetrated the heliosphere, it caused such a discharge, sort of like a bug zapper, when something gets in between the electrified plates, the high voltage plates of a bug zapper, it reduces the resistance, the electrical resistance, thus allowing the one plate to discharge, the negative plate to discharge electrons to the positive plate, or similarly, it allows the positive plate to discharge protons to the negative plate. Well, the positive plate of this particular capacitor is the heliosphere out there, comprised of many, many protons. And that discharge, it was very powerful, abnormally powerful, and that's why you have the normal abnormal reaction where the sun gets blasted with these beams of electrons, which are called return current sheets, and the currents stimulate the sun to become very hot. And that's sort of a long answer to a short question. The sun becomes very hyperactive, and even it's wonderful that we know about it. We can detect it anyway, even though we're not scientists. So they can't lie to us when we go outside and get burned by the sun. And get blinded by the sun. We know something is very, very definitely wrong, and I think that's the most shocking and conspicuous piece of evidence that we have.
One of the things I say as far as that
hyperactive. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Yeah, Exactly. I was just going to mention, as far as the heliosphere goes, one of the things that I kind of use to describe it is that it's sort of, you could consider it like the shield around the solar system that the sun is set out to protect itself and what's surrounding it, you know, the inner bodies there in the solar system. It's there as a protective bubble, basically, or a shell. And what I think we see happening is that as this stuff is going on outside of the heliosphere, it's causing the sun to actually condense down that heliosphere to allow it to protect itself further. But that then brings a lot more density into that inner solar system, the solar system that's inside of that heliosphere. Therefore, we're seeing a lot of the other changes that are occurring too.
Yeah, you mean the density of protons within our, yes, the space between the heliosphere and the sun? Yeah,
yes,
the sun is,
yeah,
like sort of, you could think of the sun as like a, maybe a nugget within a large ball, which is the heliosphere, the solar system surrounded by the heliosphere. So now you're right. All that plasma from the sun is getting discharged back to the sun, and it's exciting the sun. It's zapping the sun. It's like getting hit with a taser. You know, you jump. The sun is reacting electrically because the sun is the original, the originating electrical generator that's blowing out the solar winds to begin with. Now all that plasma is coming back because it's being discharged back. No longer do you have a separation by the space, the distance of space between the negative, primarily negative sun, and the primarily positive heliosphere, but you got a discharging due to these comets coming in, reducing the insulation resistance between the negative sun and the outer heliosphere, positive heliosphere. So that's why you got this activity, and again, that's also the solar hyperactivity, which is causing all this heat and all this intense light, is also blowing winds that hyperactivity is affecting and disturbing our magnetic field, Earth. And that's what I was describing before, which I believe is the source of energy from the sun to our magnetic, Earth's magnetic field, feeding into the center of the Earth where our solid metal core is located, putting lateral forces on that solid core, because magnetic forces do move objects. They can move objects. Putting lateral forces on the center iron core, forcing it off center, causing it to stir our molten iron core more irregularly, causing that roller coaster type jet stream. And when you have a roller coaster like jet stream, you have clashing of cold and hot air at the front, at the margin where that roller coaster occurs. You have this moisture from the Gulf of Mexico being sucked up by that wave, a jet stream. At the same time, it's clashing with the cold air on the other side of the margin of the jet stream. And that's what's the clash between hot air, hot moist air from the Gulf of Mexico, and the cold air on the other side of the front is what causes this intense weather, the hailstorms, the windstorms, and the disastrous flooding. So you're right. It's the sun, and the sun is not, it's not the sun's fault. The sun is being excited by incoming objects.
Yeah, it's reactionary, basically.
Yeah.
Thanks, John. I appreciate it. I'll let you guys go so that you can get to other questions that I know are coming in. But
right.
I definitely appreciate you being on here. And, Michael, thanks for having me on, too.
All right. Thank you, Ira.
Thank you, Ira. It's good to hear from you.
I appreciate it. And, John, we've got another call here, this one on our Skype line. We've got 831 area code. You're on Late Night in the Midlands. First name and where you're calling from, please.
Yes, sir. Wolfgang, how can you hear me? Can you hear me all right?
I can hear you.
Yes.
Yes. I just discovered your show a few weeks back. A fantastic show.
Thank you.
And I'm sorry, I didn't catch the gentleman's name
John DiNardo.
Doing the research. Yes, sir. Yes, John. Just want to let you know, your information is very valid, but I think you're missing one piece of the puzzle, if I may. I don't like to give shameless plugs to YouTube channels, but it would be in your best interest to check out a YouTube channel called Jeff Space P, just the name Jeff.
Country and around the world, and have won numerous awards. He has appeared on dozens of television and nationally syndicated radio shows over the course of 2 decades. His book, Future Esoteric, goes behind the official story, revealing there is also an alternative narrative. The newly revised second edition includes more images, captions, and information than ever before. Future Esoteric examines the metaphysical nature of reality and the storyline of what is not being told to the mass majority of people. You can find his books at cccpublishing.com or click on one of his many banners on the L&M Radio Network site at lnmradionetwork.com.
Why subscribe to Late Night in the Midlands, you ask? Well, I'll tell you why. Late Night in the Midlands covers everything, and through the thousands of expert guests who have joined Michael Vera on his show, come pieces of the big puzzle, which started and subscribe now. Talk radio like no other. Late Night in the Midlands, bringing the truth back to talk radio.
When you need a reliable source for your toner, where do you turn? Laser Technologies International Incorporated, your source for quality laser printer, copier, and fax toner. We supply a frustration-free cartridge guaranteed not to harm your printer. Delivering 100% of the quality at a fraction of the price. We have products for most major brands. Find us on the web at www.laser-technologies.com. Email us at service@laser-technologies.com. Call us at 561-792-9600. That's 561-792-9600. Laser Technologies, 561-792-9600. Providing excellent customer service since 1995.
Become a late nighter without the late nights. And subscribe now to help Late Night in the Midlands bring you the best guests with the best information. On the East Coast of the United States, from the capital city, Columbia, South Carolina, you're listening to Late Night in the Midlands with your host, Michael Vera. To talk to Michael Vera, dial 803-392-4566. Or around the world on Skype, just use Skype ID LNM Radio.
You know, folks, I have yet to have the issues that I've had tonight with YouTube as far as it freezing. And then I try to stop the stream. It won't even let it says stopping stream, but it won't stop it. So I had to actually close it out and restart it. So it's working now. But I'll tell you, John must be speaking some magic words here or something at you know, I don't know. We've done a lot of shows now on YouTube. I've not had this happen. I don't remember having it happen anyways. I guess it's happened to Ira a few times, but, you know, he's talking about Mandela effects and things like that. That might bring it in. I don't know. But, I think we've got it working well over there now. Folks, here's one thing you can do. You can come over to LateNightInTheMidlands.com. You can listen in our chat room at LateNightInTheMidlands.com. The YouTube version actually is going to be embedded on the chat and listen page here soon. So Ira and Jolene are going to get on that sometime soon. And you'll be. But right now, while you're in our chat room on the website, you could click on the video, the link. I mean, it's being shared in the chat room, and you could actually watch it and listen and do all that stuff. But you could listen to the radio feed over on our website as well in the L&M Radio Network. So, you know, there's many ways. I know people like to watch. I don't know if they're waiting for me to spill hot coffee on myself or what, but people like to watch. So here we are. And, you know, just for the record, guests, I give the option if they want to go on video, they may. If they don't, I don't make a big deal of it. I don't care. really. But you know, some guests don't care. Like last night's guest, she didn't care to do video, and I throw the option out there. So just for the record, yes, I have, I can bring guests on by video, but that's if they want to. I mean, it really don't matter. What really matters is hearing, listening, to what they have to say. I think that's the most important. I love radio. Radio, you've got to pay attention. You've got to listen. TV, I don't know. Everything's going. I mean, people miss stuff all the time. They ask questions. What happened? Why did they do that? You know, what radio, you've really got to pay attention. And so I've always been a lover of radio. And my guest tonight is John DiNardo. He is a Planet X researcher. He has a radio show he does himself. He's been a guest on my show for years. I've always enjoyed speaking with John, but I got to say, every time he's been on, we've had some kind of issues with things going down on us. I think we've got a pretty good record of that, just as I do with Peter Kling. Anyhow, that being said, folks, the lines are open. Last chance for you. If you want to call in, 213-286-1818, Skype ID, LNM Radio, and of course our old number, 803-392-4566. Now, with that being said, now remember, folks, if you call our new number, you're going to be put on mute, and the lady's going to tell you, you're on mute, and you unmute yourself. Do this. No, don't do it. Keep muted until I unmute you. Otherwise, I get rid of you and you don't come back. All right. So there we go. Let's get back to this. I've got questions still in the chat room to get to, which I'll do so right now. Now, John, we are back, and I think Ira might have actually covered this with you, but somebody did ask, let's see here, ask John, spiraling around the sun, I don't know, I'm missing stuff here. Does John believe that our asteroid belt was once a planet before it was struck by Planet X 3,600 years ago? There's one.
Yeah, I do suspect that's true, although, excuse me, we don't have really, it happened so long ago, we really don't have any evidence as to its veracity, but I do suspect that that's what happened when Planet X came in. It hit a large planet, which Zachariah Sitchin, in his book, The 12th Planet, called Tiamat, T-I-A-M-A-T, and it broke in pieces, and according to Sitchin's theory, one piece of Tiamat became planet Earth, and the rest of Tiamat became debris orbiting around where its location was, orbiting around Mars, outside of Mars, Mars's orbital ring, so that this became that post beyond Mars orbit of debris was became the asteroid belt, and Earth became a piece of it. Yeah, but that's all we can tell, is that we could say we can theorize it, but we don't know. Planet X did come in or into the solar system, and there's always been an intruder every time it made its periodic intrusion. I suspect it came in at different points in our solar system, because the ancients tell us in Sitchin's book, 12th Planet, ancient astronomers from Nineveh and Babylon said that it comes in around the orbit of Jupiter. Now, right now, we don't believe it's coming in around the orbit of Jupiter, because what happens is it loops around. It always does loop around. It has to loop around the sun. So if you can see that if it came in around, looped around the sun as close as Jupiter many, many centuries ago, well, it doesn't come in, it's not coming close to Jupiter right now. It's going way out there. It must be way, way out and loop, making its big U-turn, which is a lazy, slow U-turn, around beyond the outer planets, probably beyond Uranus. Okay. We have seen signs of the disturbances on planet Saturn and planet Jupiter as this object came in below the ecliptic, causing it to throw, gets some of its companion bodies, gravitationally captured bodies, were recaptured by Jupiter. And we saw comet explosions or comet crashes into Jupiter in 2009 and 2010, I believe. But since then, it's come in low below, and now it's overshot the sun from the south,
okay.
Overshot. And now it's coming back around way, way out there and making its return. That, incidentally, because it has overshot the sun, that's why everything, all the disturbances on the Earth and the sun sort of quieted down around the year 2009, 2010, because since then, between then and 2016, it was making its big U-turn. I'm theorizing now based on what we see. But now when it comes back, it's coming back like a slingshot, a big U-turn. And when it comes back, we're going to see increasing natural disasters, which Michael reported that we're seeing already with these increasing earthquakes,
right,
and so on.
Moving along here, a few more questions I want to get to. We did have a call. He dropped off. But caller, if you want to call back in, we'll get you. I've got to get used to this new phone thing. I really do. I got to get a third screen hooked up so I can have everything. I mean, there's so much to look at now. It's incredible. Annie asked, do you know why the sun is rising and setting so far south? And you kind of covered already, why does the sun look so white? That was the second part of her question. But why is the sun rising and setting so far south? I hear people report all the time that it's not rising and setting in the same place. Is that true?
Well, I believe that's true. The Inuit Indians of Alaska, those people live in a terrain where there is not much vegetation. They go do whaling to survive, and those people have to, in order to survive, they have to know where the sun is rising and setting throughout the year. And they're one of the first ones to report about 6-7 years ago that the sun is not rising and setting in the correct places during various points of the year as it should be. So it's absolutely true that the sun is not, that because the sun is, the Earth itself is now rotating vertically. It's basically wobbling, I believe. Now, we can tell. This is the ancients, incidentally. You know what Stonehenge was for? I'm not sure if people, scientists, even understand, even today, with all their study of Stonehenge, why it was created, what its purpose was. But I believe that because the stones are so massive, they cannot be moved. You have a fixed, basically a line of an eyesight, a fixed line of vision between the Earth and the sun for any given day of the year. And for particular days of the year, like solstice, the spring solstice and autumn solstice, I should say winter and summer solstices, you have, the sun should be repeatedly, year after year, in the same place as it lines up and shines its rays through the opening of Stonehenge. And those people who, in ancient times, who created Stonehenge, wanted a fixed, immovable monument like Stonehenge where they could see for a particular, any given day of the year, where the sun was coming through, because they knew that when this object, this massive disturbing body comes in, they may not have known that disturbing body was the actual cause of the disasters, but they knew they had to find out when the Earth was beginning to wobble. So when the Earth wobbles, the sun will no longer shine through that, the eyesight, more or less, to a particular vantage point through Stonehenge as it normally does. And you will then, civilization at that time had an indication as a consequence of that irregularity that there is going to be some kind of disaster occurring, that Earth is going into a wobble. And I think we're having that right now. In fact, the ancients actually had other ways of looking at light shining through a split. And I'm trying to remember where, but there are plenty of places on the Earth where the ancients had these, what they call petroglyphs, where they would see, watch for the light shining through an opening in rocks that would cast a light or a shadow on a particular point. And this would be an indexing, a way to index the position of the sun at any given day of the year. And if there's the Earth is going into a wobble, you're going to have problems. In fact, with ancient Colburn Bible, have you ever heard of the Colburn, K-O-L-B-R-I-N?
Yes, I have.
It was written, okay, by survivors of the last disaster in Egypt. The Israelites told the truth. Moses accurately described the great disasters, but we have amplifying information from the Egyptians who lived in Egypt at that time, who survived and wrote passages of the Colburn Bible and the Ipuwer Papyrus, I-P-U-W-E-R. You can look at that up. Look that up. That's at the Museum of Leiden, L-E-Y-D-E-N, in the Netherlands. That Ipuwer Papyrus describes great disasters that occurred on Earth at the time of the Israelites' exodus from Egypt. God created these disasters. And they talk about in the Colburn, I can paraphrase some of the things. They say the stars appeared to be swirling in space. Well, the stars were not moving. It was Earth that was going into a wobble, getting ready for a pole shift. It's like a top. When a top is spinning and it begins to slow down, it no longer is erect, remains erect in its spin. But because it's slowing down, it begins to wobble. It loses its balance. And eventually, if this top goes slowly enough, it will topple over. So that's what they wrote about in the Colburn Bible, how the stars began to whirl around in space.
Okay.
And that's basically it.
All right, and I've got some more questions here. Daryl says he's got three questions here, so I'll give it to you right off here. He says, question for the guest, what type of cosmic event could turn this planet into a molten planet, and does the guest know or have an idea of what is beneath the radiation ring that surrounds our sun? And he says, is there an idea of the temperature beneath the radiation ring?
Oh, I don't know much. The radiation ring that surrounds our sun, I'm not familiar with that. Okay. I know that the sun, if he's referring to something close to the sun, within the limited distance between the sun and Mercury, I believe. Now, I'm not an expert on this, but there is a lot of negative electron cloud. That's the only radiation that I would know about. I'm not an expert on solar science.
All right. And what about
the basics?
What about a window of time for the passing of this brown dwarf? Cosmic is listening and asked, is there a time frame of when we can expect?
Well, I'll tell you, the Bible is our best source, I believe. God foretold, said that he indeed was bringing Planet X to mankind, the great disasters to mankind, in order to shock the human race into recognizing their Creator. And in so doing, you know, fear is a great motivator. Fear is what causes people to cry out to God and to pray to God. And this is what God wants, because he wants us to have eternal life. Okay, so the Bible is God, the one who claims to be hurling this planet at us, this brown dwarf star of destruction, is God himself throughout the Bible, the Old and New Testament. So I think we can get our timeline best from there, because nobody knows the future better than the Creator of this universe. And what they say, he says, is here are the signs you're going to see. You're going to see wars and rumors of wars. Great wars and great destruction that will kill one-fourth of humankind. There's going to be various methods of killing. One-fourth, the Earth is roughly populated with about 7 billion people right now. So one-fourth of 7 billion would be, roughly 1.7 billion? Yeah, somewhere around there. So what God is saying is 1.7 billion people will be killed by war. And we see that coming up. Our friend Wolfgang, who just called in, mentioned something about a World War III scenario being set up. I wish I could talk to him more about that. He said it was somebody who was a remote viewer went looked remotely, is the Army supposedly doing remote viewing? So there must be some truth to it, some value to remote viewing, which is basically looking into the future.
Yeah.
What he found is remote viewer, according to Wolfgang, the caller, said that he went into the year 2130 and looked back, and he said that there was a nuclear war sometime, what it was, in the 21st century. And I think that's what they're setting up now. They're setting up conditions for a nuclear war. So there's some of your first signs. And I mentioned January 31st. The diabolical ruling elite are sadistic in the sense, and also they like to test us too. They have a way of telling us what they're going to do in a very cryptic, mysterious way. You're probably familiar with this, Michael, where they told us about 9/11, the coming 9/11 disaster.
Oh, yeah.
In numerous ways on the X-Files, Lone Gunman series, that was quite blatant. Where someone crashing a plane into the World Trade Center. This was done months before the 9/11 attacks. And then there was a musical group who had a music album with a picture of the Twin Towers on it. And then the Simpsons cartoons, that's where they have a lot of CIA input to the Simpsons cartoon writers who put that 9/11 code up on Bart Simpson was holding up a ticket or something, and on it was clearly labeled 9 with the two Twin Towers next to the right of the 9.
That's right. Yeah. And
spelling out 9/11.
And, John,
and in the movie Back to the Future 3. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was just going to say we've got another call here. And so if you don't mind, let's take this last call, okay. And then we'll go ahead and finish up with that. 831 area code. You're on Late Night in the Midlands. First name, where you're calling from?
Yes, sir. This is Wolfgang again. I just wanted to clarify, if I may, very quickly, that the USS Eldridge, circa 1943, the Nikola Tesla joint Einstein invisibility experiment, Al Bielek was one of the gentlemen who died in 2012 who jumped off the side of the ship with some other gentleman. I forgot his name. He was the gentleman who wound up going through a time portal as part of the invisibility process in specifically 3743 and then into coming back for 6 weeks. The NSA pulled him back in 1992 through a time loop with the machine they have based in Area 51 to 2137. And when he was in the hospital for 6 weeks, you can find these video YouTube videos regarding Al Bielek. When he was in that hospital, he was shown a map of the U.S., and it had changed, very akin to the U.S. Navy map that we all know are familiar with that came out in 1987. So my point being is that it was Al Bielek who actually jumped off the side of the USS Eldridge, wound up in these two time spots. The NSA pulled him back. He was age regressed with the technology they still have today, which we know they're using. And that was that. I wanted to mention one more thing, sir, and that is I'm very familiar with Joe Brandt, 1937, falling off the horse, hitting his head, winding up in downtown Hollywood. Another person named Sarah Manette, 1979. She was in a coma, and she saw very similar information. I'm sorry, go ahead.
How do you spell that last name? Sarah?
Manette. Sarah Manette. She was in a... in New York, in a car accident.
M-E-N-E-T.
M-E-N-E-T. Sarah Manette, 1979, or maybe 1976.
M-E-N-E-T.
Yes, and specifically, I believe it was the Zeta Reptilians. They pulled her out of body. They showed her different snapshots of the future on a certain timeline, possibly the timeline that we're on now. And it's all kind of leading up to the World War III scenario, and then the...
When do you think this World War III scenario... See, the woman asked before, what's the timeline for this Planet X destruction? Well, they're going to have a war before it happens.
And just for the record...
It's almost inevitable that they will create a war before the Planet X destruction occurs, and that's the prophets have told... stated this, including prophets of the Bible, that there'll be a war, there'll be famine, horrible war which will kill many, many people more than ever before, a right. famine that will kill so many people, and also there will be earthquakes in diverse places.
Right. And I just want to let the caller know I didn't hang up on him. I don't know what happened. We lost him. But thanks for calling in with that information. And, John, you're right. But before we finish up here tonight, I'm done. I'm not going to take any more calls tonight. But you're right that, you know, we do see these things. And I'll tell you, you know, it's hard to overlook these things, like what you mentioned with the Simpsons and all this other stuff. It really is difficult. I mean, you think, how do they know about this? But it seems like they do.
Know, everything is planned. You know, former President Franklin Delano Roosevelt, who was a major front man for the diabolical ruling elite, for the Illuminati, Franklin Delano Roosevelt was quoted as saying, in politics, nothing happens by accident. Everything is planned. Now, this movie, not only the Simpsons know, but the Simpsons, the movie Back to the Future Part 3, and many people have put YouTubes up about Back to the Future Parts 1 and 2, where they showed lots of evidence indicating they were predicting that the 9/11 attacks would occur. You just go to YouTube and look up Back to the Future 3 and 9/11. You'll see a lot of stuff. And not only Back to the Future 3, but actually Back to the Future 1 and 2 talked about 9/11 as well as 3. And by now, I see January 31st as a possible. I don't want to even pretend that I know what's going to happen. It's just a possibility. January 31st. False flag attack that may trigger the coming war that is planned. They have to have a war before these natural disasters occur.
Okay.
Whenever there's a great disaster like they're taking down the economy, destroying the economy, they always have a war. I mean, this is historically proven. The core is the cover, and it's a way of knocking, as one great CIA officer once said, it's a way of clearing the entire monopoly board. When they're going to have a financial disaster, you clear a monopoly board and you have a big war and start the whole game all over again. So this game is not going to start all over again when Planet X comes in, because God is going to prevent it from recurring. But the point is, a war is being planned, and I see possibility now. Just check into it. Back to the Future Part 3 has a train, a big train action scene, very, you know, tense scene, with a train ride at the end. And on the train is black and white, white letters on a black background, is the number 131. That might signify January 31st, maybe. Go look at it. Check it out. And with the 131, I seem to see, I caught some frames that have the Illuminati pyramid on the train. It's like a glowing pyramid inside, right below the smokestack. For a few frames, maybe for about 5 or 6 seconds or more, 10 seconds possibly. And I look at it, I stopped the frames, stopped it so I could look at it very clearly, and it sure looks like an Illuminati pyramid right next to the big letters, 131, in white letters written on a black background. Now, white on black is always an Illuminati or Freemason symbology. You see all these satanic females like Madonna, Britney Spears, Christina Aguilera, and doing their TV shows. They had one famous one with Madonna was all dressed in black and the other two girls were in white. They always watch your TV specials. You'll see the black and white contrast, which is worshiping, symbolizing the worship of Satan. Now, Satanism is another, as your female caller called in and said, what are some of the signs that Planet X is coming? You will see Satanism rising rapidly.
And it is.
That's one of the signs. Satanism. People with tattoos all over their bodies.
Well, and it is, John, because you're seeing now where they're allowing schools, elementary schools, to hold devil worshipping or satanic type classes. I don't know if you've seen that.
No, I'm shocked.
Yeah, I forget where it is, but they say that they have the right. And I would say, okay, well, why wouldn't you put that in the book with religion? And, they, you know, you're not allowed to have some Christian class in a public school. So why are you allowed to do that? But that's what they'll do. That's what they allow now. And then you've got, of course, the TV show that glamorizes Satan. I've heard many people complain about that one. What was it called? Lucifer? So
Yes.
Yeah, it's quite a bit going on.
You're right. Absolutely right. And Michael, the hand signs are so so blatant, that satanic hand signs where they take the, you know, they make the OK sign or whatever it is. You take the index finger and curl it to meet the thumb. So you're making an O, creating an O with the index finger and the thumb, while the remaining three fingers are raised up in the air. Now, that's a 666 symbol. It's very commonly known to be 666. They're doing that all the time. And whenever they do that, they're worshiping Satan for power. It's, remember, they have to worship Satan in order to maintain their power. That's why all these musical groups do it, because they put up the finger, you know, the index finger extended, and the satanic horns, the devil's horns, the index finger extended, the pinky finger extended, with the middle two fingers curled inward, so that you have the devil's horns. You'll see that all the time. I saw that in the movie Rock of Ages, not the movie, but the stage show in New York, Rock of Ages. They were flashing that sign blatantly throughout that entire music.
All right, and John, I hate to do this, but we're down. I mean, we've got about a minute left, and I want to give you an opportunity to get out anything you like, websites, where your show, anything you want to drive people to. I thank you so much for being back on the show, and look forward to doing this again.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah.
Well, thanks so much, Michael. Yeah, we can do this again. My email is contact me. Maybe we can get together and have people commune with God, because God is our only hope to, against all these horrors that are coming. So my email address is, I wish it were easier, but it's J.A. DiNardo, J-A-D-I-N-A-R-D-O, the name DiNardo, J-A-D-I-N-A-R-D-O at optonline.net. That's optonline.net. You see, email me, and maybe we can organize something where we can commune with God, because God is our only hope against all this evil and destruction that is coming to earth.
All right.
Spiritual, and his prophecies. Prophecies like Joe Brandt, B-R-A-N-D-T, where he, in 1937, Joe Brandt fell off a horse, like your caller was saying, and he had these going in and out of consciousness in the hospital. He predicted, one of the things he said, he saw somebody that I think is Donald Trump, President Trump, on the front page of a newspaper just before this great earthquake in California, the great earthquake that's coming in California. He saw a president that he said was heavier and has bigger ears than President Roosevelt. Well, that might be President Trump, who might be the president during this, when this great earthquake occurs in California.
Well, if
you... Bill Brandt's vision, B-R-A-N-D-T.
I would assume that we're going to see a big one within the next 4 years. So he probably will be the president when it happens. So maybe that is something prophetic. And, John, again, I thank you. We've got another show coming up. So, I believe me, I could go another 3 hours, but I can't, because we have another show about to come on here.
Michael.
All right. Thank you so much, John. And I've got you linked up on the website. I'll put your link in with the archive tonight as well, so people could get to you. And I thank you.
Well, thank you for all your help, Michael.
All right. Have a great night, John, and keep up the great work, my friend. Folks, there he goes, John DiNardo. We're all done here. We don't have any more time. I want to thank everybody for listening tonight and for tuning in and dealing with the problems over on YouTube. With it freezing, I don't know what happened. Ira and I are going to look at it after the show here in just a few minutes. But folks, thank you for joining. I'll be back with you on Tuesday. I'm off Monday. Be back with you on Tuesday. Keep your eyes posted to the sky, because you never know what you might see. Keep your ears posted to this broadcast, because you never know what you might learn. Good night, everybody, and thank you again. Have a great weekend. Duct Tape Nation coming up next on the LNM Radio Network. Good night.
Why subscribe to Late Night in the Midlands, you ask? Well, I'll tell you why. Late Night in the Midlands covers everything, and through the thousands of expert guests who have joined Michael Vera on his show, come pieces of the big puzzle, which started many years ago. Michael and his guests reveal information dating back to the beginning of time. To this very moment, Michael Vera not only brings you the best guests with the best information, but Michael is not afraid to call out those who are less than honest. You see, in this day and age, we need a radio show we can count on and a radio host we can trust to expose the truth one show at a time. So, become a late nighter and subscribe now. Talk radio like no other. Late Night in the Midlands, bringing the truth back to talk radio.